Hello, this is Wally Kurth.
And I'm Rena Sofer. Welcome to this edition of the My Romance series of classic audio romances. Join us now as we journey to a remote corner of England, to the beautiful and mysterious Draycott Abbey, and a story of destiny and fate.
The story of a love so intensely powerful, it endures through centuries, across oceans, even lifetimes. The story of K.C. Mallory and Nicholas Draycott in Christina Skye's Enchantment. The ghost of Draycott Abbey sat in the sullen shadows of the long gallery, staring pensively at his own portrait. Dark-eyed and velvet-clad, he stroked a great gray cat, which drowsed on his knee. Around him, the granite house seemed to sleep, intensely quiet, caught in wistful, yearning dreams. So different, the man thought sadly. How could the same house be so very different? He frowned, realizing that no one would notice him here. He was just another shadow in the darkness, just a still figure slumped in a faded damask armchair, studying his own proud features with self-loathing. Once it had been different. Once the house had rung to his shouted orders, and an army of servants had scuttled to anticipate his slightest bidding. Once she had walked here, and to look upon her had been his greatest joy. But times change. He should have known that better than anyone. No, the figure in the chair thought he liked this graceless age not at all. But then liking was not what had brought him here. Love, perhaps, but not liking. His long, pale fingers tensed and halted the rhythmic stroking of the cat. Ah, Gideon, it is hard, much harder than I'd thought, this business of coming back. Nothing is as I expected. Everything feels wrong. Too slow. Too heavy. Too clumsy. Too... He thought for a moment. Solid. Yes, that was precisely the word. And that sense of solidity was what bothered him most. Yes, old friend, it will be hard, dangerous even, should I fail. My torment will be magnified a thousandfold. But what choice have I? For a moment, anger boiled up in him, savage and lethal. Around him, the room seemed to grow chill, the darkness to heave and tremble. Then, with a ragged sigh, he closed his eyes, struggling vainly to forget how far his jealousy had driven her, and how much he had hurt her. His beloved stone walls were intact, at least, down to the last capstone in Merlin. They stood inviolate. And they were still his. That much had not changed. Nor would it ever, the ghost vowed grimly. In the shadows, his proud, gaunt features seemed to gleam and shimmer, suddenly merciless.
Sussex, England, spring. K.C. Mallory could only stare, speechless and dreamy, at the towering walls of weathered stone before her, lichen covered with climbing roses spilling color over its ancient gray towers. Draycott Abbey was a vision of heart-stopping beauty. Even more jarring, it was somehow familiar. In some strange way, she felt as if she were coming home, but that was impossible. Home was 3,000 miles away, where a small clapboard salt box nestled amid the rolling hills of western Connecticut. And this vision before her was a universe apart from that. A granite Jacobean moat house whose crenellated roofs and twisting chimneys floated like a summer dream over the Wealden hills of southern Kent. K.C. felt her breath catch. The sun was going down behind her, pouring golden light over the valley, painting the mullioned windows a fiery crimson. To be here at last, as if she were returning home from years of wandering. Frowning, Casey tossed back a windblown lock of honey-colored hair. What in the name of heaven was wrong with her? This massive granite structure was no more hers than was Balmoral Castle. And yet the feeling of familiarity persisted, along with a hunger so tangible that it hurt. Abruptly, she dropped her canvas bag and rubbed a slim hand across her weary eyes. 22 straight hours of traveling must be the source of this strange disorientation. She closed her smoky green eyes and then warily reopened them. Nothing had changed. Just as before, the abbey gleamed back at her. Like a jewel, Casey thought, set within an emerald ocean of manicured lawns, and flowers everywhere, a scattering of pinks, sweet alyssum, and Madonna lilies. Something had told her there would be lilies. A shiver ran down her spine. Next thing you'll be following a white rabbit right down into its little hole, Catherine Chelsea. Still muttering, she tossed her bag up over her shoulder and crossed the last feet of lawn onto a narrow graveled path that wound up to the house. So this was Draycott Abbey, or what was left of the medieval structure, built in 1255, nearly burned to the ground in 1645 during the troubles with Cromwell, partially restored a year later and entirely refurbished in 1793 after the 8th Viscount Draycott made a number of clever investments in the Orient. Casey could have gone on forever about this house, quoting chapter and verse of its long, rich history, right down to the ghost of an ancient ancestor who was said to pace the battlements on moonless nights, sad-eyed and travel-weary, a rose crushed between his long fingers. Yes, she knew the gray granite structure by heart. It was an imposing house, a magical house. A house of many secrets, she suspected. Once again, a shiver worked its way down her spine. But it was not the house she had come to see, though that alone would have been the dream of a lifetime. It was a different task, but an equally alluring dream to an art conservator like herself that brought her to this small corner of England. Somewhere inside the abbey was a newly discovered canvas carrying the signature of James Whistler, titled Nocturne in Lavender and Silver, Southampton Pier, an unseen, unrecorded masterpiece by probably the greatest American painter of the 19th century. Along with the canvas, a scribbled note was discovered, apparently from Whistler himself, directing his assistant to destroy the canvas. Ever the temperamental artist, Whistler would order pieces he felt inadequate to bear the scrutiny of posterity destroyed. The canvas had been discovered 2 months ago by the present owner of Draycott Abbey. Wrapped in linen, it had remained unseen and forgotten for over a century. Casey's job was to verify the painting's authenticity and to undertake any restoration that might be required. Her pulse quickened at the thought of such a discovery, and her rare good fortune in being involved in the discovery of such a masterpiece. Not that luck had much to do with it, for Casey was one of a mere handful of experts who specialized in Whistler. After completing her doctoral work, she had gone on to further study in pigment and canvas restoration at the Louvre. Her own articles on Whistler had soon become widely circulated, provoking a good deal of controversy. Perhaps it was because Casey Mallory's passion for Whistler shone through every word she wrote. Or perhaps it was just that she seemed to have a skill for seeing beyond the layers of color, right into the heart of the canvas, sensing the unspoken motivations of the painter's soul. For whatever reason, Whistler had been her life and love. And now, here she stood, windblown and weary, at the foot of an awesome stone edifice surrounded by a scene of timeless pastoral beauty, in the shadow of Draycott Abbey. Almost within reach of her long-dreamed-of Whistler. The slim beauty frowned. Authentic? Or simply another one of those Whistler hoaxes so common in the last decade since Japanese collectors had driven the prices sky high? Casey tried to calm her racing pulse, knowing that in a few hours she would have her answer. Gripping her bag, she started toward the gatehouse perched just outside the Silver Moat. Had she known what was waiting for her just beyond the crenellated stone gatehouse? Casey Mallory might never have taken another step.
Too late. Too late. He could feel it even as he jumped from his horse and lunged up the cold marble steps into an unlit house. She had gone, taking the child with her, sweeping away all his hope, all his chances to atone for his unforgivable stupidity. With a harsh curse, he turned and stumbled back into the lashing wind. His eyes narrowed on the dim line where the chalk escarpment fell away 600 feet to meet the frigid swells of the English Channel. She would have taken the old path along the cliffs. That way, she would be least likely to encounter anyone who would try to stop her. Like him. Dear God, out there on the cliffs in such a storm. He plunged forward, shouting her name wildly. But no sound drifted back to him. As he struggled south, the last frayed edges of sky bled from indigo to black far out over the channel. Too late. The wind keened. All gone. And then he heard another sound, more like the wild shriek of a bird than any human cry. The twisting stab of fear in his stomach told him that could be only one person's voice. Catherine! Wait for me! Let me! A second later, the earth tore free. With a muffled explosion, 1,000 tons of chalk and granite smashed downward, drowning out her last shrill cry. And then, only the long darkness. No! His heart pounding, Nicholas Draycott jerked upright in the chill silence, sweat-soaked and heartsick, with the telephone ringing. After 2 days of insomnia, he'd finally fallen into a ragged sleep, only to be shaken awake by the old nightmare. Just a dream, he tried to tell himself. Just an illusion, like all the others. It was the quiet that did it, or maybe it was the drinking and the endless stream of late nights. At his sides, his strong fingers clenched into fists. He stared into the room shadows, fighting a choking wave of loss and regret. Let it go, he told himself harshly. Put it behind you. It's only a damn dream, after all. The phone was still ringing, but Nicholas made no move to answer it. That, too, was over, he told himself harshly. But there were some things a person never got over. And a 10-month hell of jungle captivity in Banlai in Southeast Asia was probably one of them. On and on the phone rang, shrill peal after shrill peal, echoing loudly in the deathly silence of the house. Nicholas's silver-gray eyes narrowed, studying the receiver. The ringing stopped for a few moments, only to begin anew. Slowly the Englishman reached over and lifted the receiver, not saying a word. A flat, faintly accented voice broke the silence. Ah, Lord Draycott, you respond at last. Have you given any more thought to our proposal? Nicholas did not answer. Still stubborn, are you? Such a pity, that. He was just like all the other callers. Murderous visions burned through Nicholas's brain, but he knew that expressing them would only give these men what they wanted. He held a silence. So, you have made your choice, Lord Draycott. That makes my own choice so much easier. There will be no more warnings. You have 4 days. The next time we will not miss, I assure you, Lord Draycott. A second later, the connection broke off into scattered static. Damn these people who came spying day after day. Damn them all. But the 12th Viscount Draycott knew that the man had spoken the truth. Unless he came up with a miracle by Friday, he was a dead man. He got out of bed and tugged on a pair of charcoal trousers. In the darkened room, the scars radiating from his pelvic bone to the outside of his knee were barely visible. He hardly noticed them now, either. And someday, maybe the rest of the scars from Banlai would fade, too. Frowning, Nicholas punched out a number on the telephone. A clipped voice answered at the other end. 6215... Inspector Jameson, Nicholas Draycott calling. Lord Draycott, has something... Nothing new, Inspector. I merely wanted to see if you'd got anything on the men who took my Turners. I'm afraid not, Lord Draycott. These were no amateurs, unfortunately. We're tracking our regular sources just in case the stolen painting surface. But it could take weeks. And time is the one thing I don't have, Nicholas thought grimly. What about Trang? Anything new there? From the other end of the line came the rustle of papers. There has been some revived activity in his part of Burma. A few munitions purchases, the usual opium deals. Nothing significant, however. The villagers swear they saw this man Trang cut down in the barrage after your release, and that he is buried in the hills outside Banlai. Which leaves me wondering why you doubt their opinion. Is there perhaps something you're not telling us, Lord Draycott? For a moment, rage darkened Nicholas's vision. There was a bloody lot he wasn't telling the inspector, but only because it was none of his damn business. And as for Bonlai's grimy little dictator, Nicholas, too, had seen him fall in the gunfire when he was rescued. And yet who else but Trang could be behind the harassing phone calls he'd been getting? Who else but Trang knew the details of those last desperate days at Bonlai and Su Win, the woman who had betrayed him? One of the warlord's men, perhaps. Or one of that motley horde of 100 different nationalities who drifted around Trang, men of no allegiance to anything except themselves. And what did they want from him anyway? Nicholas's hands tightened as he felt the old gnawing sense of powerlessness begin to choke him. Lord Draycott, are you going to answer my question? Well, just call it instinct. Trang and I got to know each other pretty well up there in the jungle. I guess it's often that way between captor and captive. Just an instinct, Lord Draycott. Did you know that Trang was supposed to have buried a fortune in jewels somewhere in those hills? Not one piece has ever been recovered, as a matter of fact. Are you calling me a liar, Inspector? There was a silence at the other end. Not a liar, but I think there's a damn sight more that you're not telling us, my lord. I can't remember, damn it! The inspector's next words were slow and careful. There are ways of remembering. Relaxation techniques, hypnosis, drugs. Thanks, but no bloody thanks, Inspector. I'm done with Banlai. All I want now is to get on with my life. I'm sorry to hear that, Lord Draycott, because I'm afraid there is very little we can do for you until you give us something more concrete to go on. Nicholas's jaw hardened to a rigid line. He'd expected nothing more than this, but time was running out, and he was nowhere nearer to an answer than before. Of course, Inspector. Good night. After cradling the receiver, he stalked to the window and pulled aside the curtain. To the east, the valley was tinged with purple shadows, while the distant Wealden Hills beyond shone vermilion in the setting sun. And that's when he saw her. A long, cool column of womanhood poured into a pair of expensive designer denims so favored by the bloody Americans. A mane of blonde hair spilled about her shoulders. He watched the woman move around to the side of the house. He cursed, long and savagely. So she was another gossip hunter, another maggot come to feed off the wounds of Banlai. When would they learn that his privacy was not for sale? That he refused to see his story become cheap copy to fuel tabloid sales? Photojournalists. A fancy word for voyeurs, he thought angrily. He swore this one would be no more successful than any of the others who'd come in search of a story, even though she was stunning. Trust Edward Armistead, one of Fleet Street's most ruthless gossip peddlers, to find someone like her to track down a story. Furious, he turned from the window, a wild plan already forming in his head. For right now, Nicholas Draycott was no longer a gentleman, no longer the hero of Banlai. Tonight, he was only a man who had reached the end of his rope.
The air was still and heavy, rich with the scent of thyme and hyacinth. Casey moved forward into the cool shadows of the stable. She called out several times, but no one answered. Frowning, she tried to recollect the few bits of information she'd been told before leaving New York by her employer, Cassandra Edwards. Lord Draycott is an unusual man. He's intensely protective of his privacy. You'd do best just to keep out of his way. I imagine his staff will provide you with anything you need. The man probably won't even be in residence at the Abbey. He has homes all over England. That suited Casey just fine. The last thing she wanted was a nervous owner hovering about while she examined the would-be Whistler canvas. But with several $1 million riding on her decision, she couldn't blame an owner for being a little nervous about her findings. Still, she hadn't thought the Earl would be quite so eccentric as to leave the house closed up and silent with no one at all to meet her. After all, he had stipulated this weekend as the best time for her to arrive. Casey pulled her bag higher on her shoulder, frowning. Perhaps money and pedigree did that to a person, made him cold and careless of others. She made a mental note to avoid the Viscount at all costs. Inside the stables, the last golden beams of sun slanted down through the high windows. Casey's breath caught. Even here, the sense of timelessness, of being caught in a dream, lingered, for the stalls were all empty, pooled with shadows. So where was everyone? She had been punctual to the dot. The bus driver had dropped her at the foot of the home wood and had provided her with careful directions to the abbey. Her brow creased in thought. She dropped her canvas bag and sat down on an upturned wooden crate. Her gaze wandered to a meticulous carving atop the first stall. 3 horses in full gallop, tails flying, hooves aloft. On an impulse, she unzipped her bag and extracted her camera. Unless she missed her guess, that detail was an 18th-century masterpiece, perhaps the work of Grinling Gibbons himself. Quickly, she switched on her flash and began to shoot. She would ask the Viscount for permission when she saw him, but meanwhile, this was just too good a chance to pass up, especially since Cassandra had just received a commission to restore a pair of sculptures by Gibbons in Cheshire. Concentrating on her documentation, she didn't notice the tall shadow which separated from the darkness of the front court. Nor did she see the glittering eyes which scrutinized her, harder than burnished steel.
Nice. Very nice. And it's about bloody time you got here.
Casey spun about. He stood well over 6 feet, broad-shouldered and lean, eased into a battered tweed jacket and form-fitting charcoal trousers. His face was a fascinating play of angles and shadows in the darkness of the stables. His eyes smoldered. Dangerous, she thought dimly, sensing an aura of power about him that fairly crackled and made her own skin tingle in response. Casey tamped down her rioting pulse. "Who are you? You nearly terrified me." The man continued to study her in silence. Casey noticed a faint silver scar running across the man's cheekbone. It gave him the cold look of a pirate, and one dark brow slanted up, mocking her. More of Cassandra's warnings from back in New York came to her. "Don't let them intimidate you. Those wretched blue bloods will walk all over you if you give them half a chance. Don't forget, it's still the 16th century as far as they're concerned." Casey shot him a challenging look, her green eyes glittering. "I'm Casey Mallory. Cassandra Edwards sent me." The man's expression did not change.
"Cassandra Edwards."
He seemed to find the name unfamiliar. His voice was dark silk, and it made Casey's skin tighten and prickle. The sight of that dark hair shadowing his open collar was doing equally strange things to her pulse. "Get a hold of yourself, Casey girl," she thought. Then she recalled that Lord Draycott had stipulated that the Whistler Project be kept totally secret. "I've come about the research work." His eyes slid from her wind-blown hair to the tips of her boots, missing no detail. Finally, his full lips curved in the ghost of a smile.
"Nice. Yes, very nice. Indeed. I shall have to thank Cassandra Edwards. From New York. Is that right?"
He moved a step closer, his face made even leaner by the shadows. "Yes, that's correct." Casey tried to ignore the sudden trip beat of her heart. She saw his lips tense in a hard line, as if he were struggling to retain his control. Dimly, Casey found herself wondering just what it would take to make him lose that control, to melt the ice in those wintry eyes. She shivered slightly. "You are Lord Draycott, aren't you?"
"Does it matter?"
Casey frowned. What was wrong with the man, anyway? I'd like an answer, now. If you are not Lord Draycott, then I'm wasting my time here.
Oh, you're not wasting your time, my dear. I assure you of that.
Smiling, the man moved a step closer. So close now that Casey could feel the heat of his hard body. Suddenly his fingers were cradling her face, his thumb tracing the curve of her cheek. She froze. What do you think you're...
First things first, my dear.
He moved so close that she felt his heat in earnest, along with the barely leashed power of his lean body, until she wanted to feel much, much more. What in the name of heaven was happening to her? As she stumbled away from him, his lips quirked in a mocking challenge.
I shall have to assess your qualifications before we talk business.
Casey took another step back. Her pulse was wild, her heart slamming against her ribs. Something was very, very wrong here. Cassandra sent my Vita ages ago. Or are you having second thoughts because I'm a woman?
Oh, I wouldn't have it any other way, my dear.
Their eyes locked. Slate gray to jade green. The force of the contact was enough to make her jump. Casey's jaw set in a mutinous line. The man was a bastard, no mistake about it, but this job was too important to risk losing. Steady, kiddo. Show him that it takes a damn sight more than one insolent Englishman to frighten you away. She was just getting ready to tell him so when he reached out and curved his hand around her shoulder, slipping it deep into the warm hair at the back of her neck. Her eyes widened in shocked inquiry. She tried to speak, but her throat was suddenly too dry. His voice, beside her ear now, was darkly intimate.
Casey, did you say your name was? Let me see. Personable. Intelligent. Open to new ideas. Everything I requested. You are all those things, aren't you?
Yes, I suppose so. Suddenly his mouth came down on hers, as fiercely erotic as any of those forbidden thoughts she had been trying so hard to ignore. His mouth opened, urgent and persuasive, demanding a response, and somehow Casey gave it, her lips softening beneath his breath hissed out in a hot growl of triumph. He wanted her, she thought, and dear God, she wanted him to want her. Suddenly it seemed as if her whole life had been no more than a prelude to this moment. She didn't move. What was happening to her? For wild heartbeats, she stood paralyzed beneath his touch, aware of a thousand different sensations at once. There was the raw awareness of the man himself, his mouth hot against hers, his fingers powerful and demanding, where they teased her neck. He moved over her like a man with a mission, and dimly Casey realized that right now she was the mission. Suddenly she was dizzy and spinning, and nothing else in the world mattered but that he stop, and that he never stop. His ribs crushed her chest, and his taut thighs backed her against the cool wall. She blinked, stunned by the hardness of his body pressing against her softness. A raw, choked moan escaped her throat. Was she mad? She drew her palms up to his chest, meaning to push him away, but he caught the sounds of her moan between his open lips and answered with a hoarse groan of his own. He seemed to sense exactly where to skim her neck to drive her wild, exactly how to kiss her deeply until she was shivering with need. And somehow, Casey seemed to know the same, how to smooth the hard, corded muscles at his shoulders, how to feather her fingers through the black hair at his temples, as if she'd done this all a thousand times before. Her fingers tensed at his chest as a dark voice whispered,
"But you have touched him like this before, and he's touched you just the same, until you begged him for more, much more than this."
Heated, erotic images swept over her. Images of hard thighs and soft, yielding lips. Images of his long fingers, sure and urgent, feathering over her naked thighs, parting her softness, his body rising over her. Casey's breath caught in a ragged gasp. Madness! She balled her hands into fists and shoved desperately at his chest. Stop! Let me go! But her protest came too late to be believable, and they both knew it. The next minute she was swept up in his arms and tossed face down over his shoulder. Blood surged in hot waves to her head as she fought her way through the drugging storm of passion he had aroused so unerringly. Furiously, Casey flayed at his back and shoulders, kicking her feet wildly. All the time, she cursed herself for being the worst sort of fool. "What in the name of heaven do you think you're..." Suddenly, she was spinning through space, landing with a sharp jolt in a mound of sun-warmed hay. Far above, a ray of fading sunlight slanted down through a mullioned window. Casey pushed up onto one elbow. She had had more than enough of this fool and his arrogance, and more than enough of her own strange reaction to him. "I don't know who you are or what you think you're doing, but I'll see that you're struck from Cassandra's client list. You'll never get another researcher down here ever again. So your precious Lord Draycott can just kiss off any other restoration projects he might have in mind. When I'm done, you won't be able to find a restorer in Timbuktu who'd work here." The man's only answer was a sardonic smile. In horrified silence, Casey watched his long fingers drop to his belt. A deep red blush stained her pale cheeks. "Just what in the name of hell do you think you're doing now?" The slate eyes narrowed. His belt slid free with a soft hiss, darkly intimate in the confined space of the stall.
"My dear, I'm getting ready to screw you. That is how you say it on your side of the Atlantic, is it not? I don't believe I've ever had an American before, and I find I'm rather looking forward to the experience."
He tossed the belt to the stable floor. White-hot fury exploded through Casey's veins. None of this could actually be happening, could it? But the tingling of her lips where his mouth had savaged hers told her this was no dream, and the urgent tension of her skin clamoring for more of his heat told her the same thing. She pushed unsteadily to her knees. "Now wait just one damn minute. You can't really believe..." Her voice died away sharply when she saw his fingers fall to his zipper.
"We can discuss your terms later. Of course, they will depend on just how well you perform for me."
Casey's heart slammed against her chest. Perform? Terms? Listen, this is some kind of joke, right? Wide-eyed, she stared at the place where his hands worked. The fabric was stretched taut. The realization of just why it was so tight sent a wave of crimson shooting through Casey's cheeks. And then, with a sharp metallic snap, his zipper slid free. Casey's eyes were fixed in horrified fascination as his fingers began to pull the zipper down, lower and lower. The fabric parted slowly, inch by inch, to reveal nothing but taut, bronzed skin. And in a few more seconds, he would... Suddenly, the man's fingers went still.
"You are the coal girl I phoned for, aren't you?"
Casey's eyes widened. A firestorm of fury ripped through her. "Get this through your thick skull. I'm an art restorer. Cassandra Edwards sent me to see Lord Draycott about the project he requested." The man's eyes narrowed, running thoughtfully over her heaving breasts.
"Exquisite," Nicholas Draycott decided, "and even more dangerous than he'd thought. Almost too damn hot to handle." "What sort of project? A project of Edward Armistead's, perhaps?"
"I am only at liberty to discuss it with Lord Draycott." The slate-gray eyes narrowed.
"Indeed. Well, I'm afraid he's busy. As his estate manager, I'm the one you'll have to deal with. An art restorer, you say? Come, my dear, when was an artisan ever so lovely? So seductively packaged? No, let's just dispense with this charade. I didn't ask for any particular erotic fantasy. I thought I made that very clear to your employer. Simple sex. That's all I require."
Casey drew back her head and screamed. It silenced the Englishman. "You let me out of here right now, Lord Draycott!" His keen eyes scoured her face.
"Didn't fool you. What a pity. Well, you're not leaving here. Not on your goddamn life, Miss Casey Mellory."
Her lips tightened as she fought to salvage her rapidly splintering control. Suddenly, she went very still. An outrageous plan creeping into her head. Something entirely out of character. Then Casey found herself smiling. Yes, it would be the perfect thing. And she would get her look at the Whistler, too. Slowly, she sat back in the straw, studying him through lowered lashes. Then her tongue gently swept her upper lip.
Lord Draycott's silver-gray eyes narrowed, fixed on the sight. What the devil? He never had time to finish. His breath caught in a rush as the woman in the straw smiled up at him with wanton promise. The sight of her was like a 50,000-volt electric current plugged directly into his heart. Or into his groin, to be more precise. Her slim fingers moved to the top of her shirt and slipped the first button free. Slowly, teasingly, with total awareness of the infinite torture it was causing him, Draycott growled a curse. His jade-eyed temptress merely moved on to the next button. Suddenly, Draycott was on fire, in a way he hadn't been for months, with a pain that had nothing to do with burns or reconstructive surgery. It was a fire of wanting, of needing, a fire for total possession, just as he had possessed this woman long before. He frowned, wondering where that crazy thought had come from. Perhaps he was farther gone than he'd realized, cooped up out here in the country. Maybe this idea of paid companionship was something he should have considered sooner. Then his lips twisted in distaste. It was always for payment, anyway. There was invariably a price. It was simply paid in different ways. And then his mind went blank. For the woman's hand was at mid-chest, and a pink expanse of skin mocked him along the faint shadow between her breasts. Two buttons more, Draycott found himself thinking. His breath was coming strangely heavy now, and the pain at his groin didn't even bear thinking about. The woman smiled slowly, her head tilting back, showing him she knew damn well what she was doing, and was enjoying the effect. Thoroughly.
How do you like my performance so far?
To Draycott's infinite disgust, he had to clear his throat before he could answer. Just fine. But I think I'll suspend judgment until I've seen everything you're offering. Casey slipped the next button free.
Oh, you'll like it.
Draycott felt beads of sweat break out on his brow. Perhaps we should discuss terms now, after all.
Oh, not yet. I have so much more to show you, my lord. And you will show me that pretty painting of yours in return, won't you? I've heard so much about it. I just can't wait to tell all my friends I've seen it.
Her fingers slipped lower, tugging the white shirt free of the waistband of her jeans. Draycott had to struggle to hear anything she was saying. Painting? Dear God, she was the painting. A perfect Botticelli masterpiece. He could look at her forever.
You do remember the painting. In the long gallery, isn't it?
On the fourth floor. He had to tell her to stop, he thought. He had to tell her not to stop. Her full mouth curved in a blinding smile, and the sight was like a shaft of sunlight plunged right into his heart. He wanted to see her smile like that always. When she awoke, her hair tousled on his pillow. When he slipped off her clothes. When he felt her convulse in wild, breathless passion beneath him, whispering his name. Dear God, what was wrong with him? Had he lost the last ragged shreds of his sanity? Now you listen to me, young lady. She didn't listen. Instead, her slim hands drifted down to the last, tantalizing button of her shirt. A secret smile on her face, she rose and began to inch toward him.
Oh, I'm listening, my lord. You have my total attention, I assure you.
Draycott couldn't have moved even if the stables were on fire and the roof falling on his head, which in a way, they were. At least as far as his screaming senses were concerned. Her eyes challenging, the beautiful intruder slipped past him, one hand trailing teasingly across his tensed shoulders. The faint scent of gardenias rose from her warm skin, inundating his senses. tightening muscles already taut past enduring. She was all woman, all soft, yielding desire. She was the fire that lit his restless nights, the dream that tormented his lonely days. His breath hissed out with the nearness of her. He felt her slip around him, then draw close to his back. He was on fire with wanting her. He was driven by an infinite need to touch her in every way that a man had ever touched a woman and then some. He was falling? With his next heartbeat, Draycott was spinning down, his legs kicked straight out from under him. Gasping, he hit the cold cobblestone floor, breaking his fall with knees and wrists. What in the name of bloody hell? He cursed harshly, struggling to stand, fighting the raw agony radiating from his kneecaps. He was still cursing when he heard the doors to the stall slam shut behind him. With a sharp thump, a piece of wood was wedged between the handles on the outside of the door.
"Enjoy your evening, Lord Draycott. I'm afraid it'll be rather colder than the night you had planned, but maybe you'll learn something in there. Not that I count on it overly much. Oh, and don't hold your breath waiting for Cassandra to send down another restorer. You've had your chance, and frankly, you've just blown it."
Fury swept through Draycott, fury at his own stupidity, fury at her cunning, and fury at how much he wanted her still in spite of everything. What would the little bitch do now? Exactly what she'd come here to do, and like a fool, he'd told her exactly where to find the Whistler. Kiss it goodbye, imbecile, and she'll be long gone before you can even work that bloody door free. The Viscount's eyes rose, smoking with rage, assessing the 12-foot walls around him with disgust. Bloody, blazing hell, how could he possibly be such a damn fool? Again.
Casey was gasping by the time she reached the front of the stable. Just beyond, sheer granite walls beckoned across a silver sheet of water, shadowed and smooth in the gathering darkness. He must have come out this way. There had to be a wretched door here somewhere. Breathlessly, she ran over the narrow two-arched stone bridge that spanned the moat. And then she saw the door, tucked behind the base of a chimney, painted gray to blend in with the granite walls. Casey's heart raced as she seized the doorknob and twisted violently. The door slid open smoothly before her, revealing a long corridor of spotless, sparkling marble. She stopped, turning back to listen to the night. No noise, no angry shouting. Good, he must have given up. Now to find the stairway. Warily, she slipped inside, feeling a shiver work down her spine as the silence of the Abbey's interior fell over her like a cool, enveloping cloak. The house seemed to say, "Welcome. We've been waiting for you." Casey caught her breath, fighting her dark fancies. Too much traveling, she told herself, too little to eat. Of course, it was all so simple. There was nothing wrong with her that a decent meal and a full night's sleep wouldn't cure. So, soundless and graceful, she darted off towards the stairway and her waiting Whistler, determined to have at least one sight of the tantalizing canvas before she turned her back on this place forever. The house seemed to whisper,
"Never say forever. Forever has a way of happening, in places and ways you haven't begun to imagine."
That dim warning, too, Casey ignored. It took her only seconds to find the massive oak staircase. She looked neither right nor left, denying herself the pleasure of that rare and ancient house. Somehow, she knew she must close her eyes to its beauty, that if she dropped her guard even once, she would never find the strength to leave. And now there was a clock ticking in her head, telling her that a silver-eyed predator was only minutes behind her. Driven by sheer adrenaline, she found her way to the top floor. And there, she forgot her fear. For now, the luminous canvas was before her, shimmering in the first faint rays of moonlight spilling through the long gallery's tall windows. There, Casey made her last and most deadly mistake, which was to underestimate the man with the voice like silk and the eyes like beaten silver. eyes that she seemed to have known forever.
He found her at the south wall of the long gallery, seated before the great canvas. Her long legs were tucked beneath her, and her eyes were radiant. The Englishman's face filled with awe at the picture she made, her long hair gleaming silver in the moonlight, her whole being suffused with love for the canvas that was before her. Suddenly he was ripped by jealousy at the warmth that glowed from her eyes, angry that he wasn't the one who'd put it there. Suddenly he wanted to be an artist so he could paint her, a poet so he could capture her in exquisite words. Most of all, he wanted to be her lover so he could know her warmth always and in a thousand intimate ways. And then, like a dirty tide, memories of Bonlai washed over him. Memories of betrayal, memories of deceit, and the blinding pain and rage that came in its aftermath. Memories of the other woman for whom he had also wanted to be all those things, a woman who'd taught him everything there was to know about betrayal. Draycott's jaw clenched. He fought down the urge to stride through the gallery and shake her. He shook beneath a fierce need to touch her, to crush her against the wall and bury himself deep in her heat and softness.
Unaware of the brooding presence behind her, the woman came slowly to her feet. She shook herself slightly, as if fighting the spell of the great canvas. Her eyes were fixed still on the dim, phantom boat that rocked in timeless silence beneath a lavender moon. Her heart filled with its beauty. Casey breathed a silent song of thanks for this rare gift she'd been given, for having glimpsed such a masterpiece even once. Most of all, for the knowledge deep in her heart that it was indeed from Whistler's hand. A tear slipped down her cheek. For long moments she didn't move. Struggling with nameless regrets and disturbing memories, shadowed fragments that clambered up from some dark place inside her, so deep that she had never before guessed they existed. "Go now, Catherine Chelsea, go now, or you'll never go." One hand to her lips, she spun about and stumbled toward the door. In her desperation to be away, she didn't notice the tall shadow unmoving amid the other shadows of the silent room. Her trembling fingers rose, sweeping her eyes blindly, and then she was gone.
Hidden in the shadows of the long gallery, Nicholas Draycott stood frozen, his hard fingers clenched into fists. His head spun as he tried to grasp what he'd just seen. She hadn't taken the painting after all, and that meant... Abruptly, his expression hardened. "It means nothing, you fool. It means that she wants photographs and juicy gossip, not canvases. She probably doesn't even know what the hell she's looking at." Draycott reminded himself what she'd said back in the stable. But try as he might, he couldn't forget her hesitation and the dreamy look on her face. Right now, every sense was clamoring that he was wrong about her. In spite of that instinct, something made him hold back, waiting silently in the shadows outside the door. Merely the logical need to learn her real intentions, he told himself coldly. Merely a natural desire to see that she took nothing with her when she left. By the time she reached the front staircase, he was gone, melting back into the darkness, where an ancient rear staircase ran down to a hidden passage leading out to the gatehouse. Just in case she stole something else on her way out, Draycott told himself. But he knew that, too, was a lie.
End of Side One.
The first fat drops of rain had just begun to fall when Casey jerked open the side door. Her shoulders slumped as she stood staring out into the night. A long sigh escaped her tense lips. So, this was it. No way out except to walk to town. She absolutely refused to go back and ask that misbegotten swine in the stable for anything, not even if her life depended on it. She tossed her bag firmly over her shoulder and turned up her collar, fighting to see through the slanting sheets of wind-driven rain. Casey had all she could do to keep herself upright as she tottered over the rain-slick grass and forced herself forward into the rushing darkness. It couldn't be more than 5 miles to town. Her bus ride from the village had taken no more than 15 minutes. But in the night and the lashing rain, 5 miles seemed like the other side of the world. At least she would have the memory of the painting to warm her. 15 minutes later, she hadn't even reached the bottom of the hill. The lightning was much closer now, her only beacon in the sullen darkness of the storm. Surely no more than 4 miles to go, she told herself optimistically. Suddenly, she stiffened, listening to the wind howl through the trees. Then she heard the other sound. It came from nowhere and everywhere, and the hands were from the fabric of night itself, jerking her around and holding her rigid. Casey screamed. His face was a cold mask of anger. But then Casey saw something else, the buried traces of anxiety and concern. For her, in spite of what she'd done? For a wild instant, she felt a primal desire to set the fires of passion aglow in those silvery eyes once again. His fingers bit into her shivering shoulders.
Just where in the name of God do you think you're going?
Back to Alfriston. Back to sanity. Back to civilization. Any place that's away from you. His fingers tightened.
It's 8 miles to the village. You'll never make it in the dark.
Why not? I happen to like walking. With a ragged curse, Draycott seized her and swung her up over his shoulder. Let me go this instant, you bastard! But the Englishman's hard, pounding gait did not slacken as he set off over the rolling lawns to the house. Casey hammered his sodden back and tugged at his hair, all without the slightest apparent effect. Finally, she screamed, "Put me down!" Draycott stopped.
You promise not to bolt if I do?
Her heart thundering, Casey considered her answer. I won't run. Not yet, anyway. Grim-faced, Draycott pulled her from his shoulder. The next instant, Casey was sliding slowly down his rain-slick body. He was all hardness, bone and muscle against her softness, and Casey felt his need revealed clearly in every taut, wet inch. As her feet touched the grass, his eyes took in the near transparency of her wet shirt. Draycott's pain at his groin returned, far worse than before.
Dear God, who are you? What are you doing to me?
Casey stared back at him, equally dazed. His words drove straight into her heart, echoing the same turmoil she was feeling. The storm around them paled to insignificance beside the savage, wordless emotion that rocked them both. Their eyes locked. She felt all his need, his shock, his fury, his vulnerability, no matter how hard he tried to hide it. Above them, the wind raged on, hurling sheets of rain down onto their frozen bodies. Lightning split the sky, and then suddenly there was no world and no time. Only the two of them. Only the naked need that swept out of some other place to engulf them. Draycott put his hands gently on her shivering shoulders.
You'll catch pneumonia out here. Come back to the Abbey with me, Casey Mallory. Let's begin again. I'm afraid I've been a bloody fool. You don't have to be one, too.
Casey could barely breathe for the intensity of the feelings flowing over her, for the touch of his hard body against her, for the need to feel him far closer still. Bodies bared, skin pressed inch to inch, as they slid into passion's raw center. Dear God, what was happening to her? When had she become this strange new person, this wanton creature of hot desire and reckless need? Settle down, Catherine Chelsea. It's just all those female hormones talking. Maybe you've gone too long without listening to what they had to say. And they were certainly talking right now, with a vengeance.
Casey?
One word. But the way he said it, slow and uncertain, nearly pushed her over the edge. I can't ever go back. Not there, not with you. He paused.
You must. The Whistler's waiting for you. I saw you in the long gallery. You love looking at it. Don't try to deny it, Casey. Your eyes couldn't lie. Not about a thing like that.
Another shudder ripped through her. It was madness even to consider what he asked. She knew instinctively that she had to get away from this place, from this man. Yes, far away before she did something crazier still. Draycott's lips feathered over the chill curve of her ear.
No one else has ever seen the canvas for 100 years. You'll be the first to touch it, to learn its secrets. It's waiting there right now, Casey. All you have to do is come back with me.
It was the lowest sort of bribe, but Nicholas Draycott didn't care. He couldn't let her go away. Not this way. She was either his sweetest dream or his worst nightmare, and he had to find out which. Casey's body shook from the cold and the struggle to control some dark, nameless yearning. But she was losing. Draycott could feel it in the quiver that ran through her shoulders.
Now, Casey.
Oh, all right. Yes, damn you. His smile was dark triumph itself, but when he took her hand and tried to pull her back toward the house, Draycott found it was going to be a little more difficult than he thought. Scowling, Casey dug in her heels. On 3 conditions.
Name them.
First, we call New York and verify my credentials. I want no more questions on that score.
Done.
Second, you move my things, such as they are, into the gatehouse. Draycott's response was slower this time.
Very well.
Third, you give me all the gatehouse keys. The Englishman's eyes darkened.
I can't do that. There are reasons.
Casey spun about and began to stride over the downs towards the village.
Oh, all right, damn it. One of us has to be sensible about this.
Scowling, he crossed to her, shrugged out of his coat and pulled it over her head. In the process, his arm encircled her shoulder. Her breast grazed his rib. They froze while the rain hammered down on his makeshift tent. For long, breathless moments, neither moved, caught in the warmth and darkness beneath. Somehow she heard his silent challenge, attuned to him as she had never been to any other man.
You think you're safe, but you're not, Casey Mallory. I'll have you every way there is to have a woman. You couldn't stop me if you wanted to, and you don't.
With a little gasp, Casey broke free and stumbled forward over the grass, knowing no danger could match that of being caught in this man's arms. Almost immediately, she slipped in the wet grass and fell to her knees. Without a word, Draycott swept her up into his arms and strode forward across the glistening sweep of lawn. Somehow, her hand slid around his neck. Somehow her fingers combed through his wet hair. Casey felt him shudder. And then the shuddering was hers. The gatehouse was before them. In the darkness, the tower stood stark and forbidding. Casey frowned, trying to ignore the chill of fear that swept down her spine. She wondered how she ever considered this place comforting, as the brooding Englishman carried her beneath the stone arch into the silence of the abbey's watchful, waiting walls. The storm passed on to the north soon after their return. In careful silence, Marston, a white-haired butler, showed Casey to a room on the gatehouse's second floor. After reminding her to lock her door, he walked downstairs. A few moments later, she heard him lock the ground-level entrance door. She got out of her wet clothes, crawled into the bed, and lay back slowly, holding the bed linens protectively against her neck. It was cold for a June night, and she found herself wishing for her bags, which had been lost on the flight from New York. Back at Heathrow, she'd requested that they be shipped on to the Abbey when they were found. She was reminding herself to phone the airline in the morning when her eyelids grew heavy. How good it feels to be home again, she thought, just before her eyes closed for good.
In his bedroom, Nicholas Draycott paced. He should have fallen asleep hours ago. But jade green eyes drifted before him, and a vision of tawny-colored hair. Lips soft and proud by turns, and a body sweet beyond imagining. With a low curse, he tried to fight the haunting pull of her, to forget the dreams. But it was no good. He knew, without the slightest hint of a doubt, that she was the woman in those dreams, and he the man. When he could pace no more, Nicholas sank tiredly into a chair by the window, and finally slept. He was tossed instantly into dreams. Thunder, the slash of rain and wind. His hands fought the empty air. "Catherine, come back! You must not go!" His eyes were stark, desperate with fear. The wind swept back her cloak, and he saw her face, green-eyed, chiseled beauty, her porcelain skin glazed with tears. Guilt wedged in his throat. He had driven her away. He and his brother Adrian, with their constant quarreling and their everlasting jealousy. And then her wild, shrill scream, twisting his heart into a thousand pieces. "No!" His pulse thundering. Nicholas jerked upright in the chair. Only the dream, he told himself, trying to steady his breathing. Only an illusion. But tonight the pain was far worse. Because tonight Nicholas had sensed that it all might have turned out differently if he hadn't been so bloody stupid. He stared out into the silver night, choked by a wave of regret, realizing that this dream was more real than anything he had ever known. Silent and silver, the moon rose over moat and meadow, and the walls of the abbey seemed to shimmer and change. The ghost's eyes were keen and clear in the moonlight. They studied the darkened windows of the turreted gatehouse. There, the motionless figure thought. So close, and yet she might just as well have been an eternity away. His eyes clouded, harsh with regret. Ah, yes. Regret is life's bitterest poison. Hadn't he read that somewhere, eons ago? Noiseless, the ghost glided across the clipped lawns, and as if of its own accord, the oak door swung open. He found the bedroom by feel and memory alone. He had memories enough for 100 lifetimes, after all. And then the moon met him in greeting, pouring in through her window. Casey's beautiful hair spilled over the white linen pillow. Her smile was faint, soft, and infinitely sweet now in sleep. The darkness trembled. Sheer will became being. Emotion turned to brooding substance. A shadow fell over the sleeping woman's face. Dreaming, Casey twisted restlessly. The brooding eyes swept over her face, issuing a silent command. "Wake up. We have waited long for you, and now the time for sleep is past." The ghost's eyes waited, raw with hunger. But for now, seeing her was enough. There would be time for all the rest in the long, dreaming midnights of summer yet to come. Since she could never be allowed to leave this place again.
The sun shone the following morning as Casey halted at the door to a dining room overlooking the moat and western lawns. His face expressionless, Nicholas Draycott held out a chair for her.
"I trust you slept well, Miss Mallory."
He was clean-shaven and perfectly dressed, and the sight only made Casey angry since she had been reduced to wearing the same rumpled shirt and creased jeans from yesterday. She slid into her seat. "Perfectly, thank you."
"In that case, let's get right down to business. As I see it, we have two choices."
"Aren't you forgetting something?"
"I don't believe so."
"You agreed to call New York."
"It seems that Miss Edwards is unavailable. Her answering service said that she had gone on holiday."
Damn! Cassandra hadn't told her that she was planning to go away. It complicated everything. She frowned at Draycott. "What are you going to do about it?"
Since I can't very well summon Miss Edwards back from her vacation, we'll just have to proceed as planned, until she returns, at least. I'm prepared to do that much.
Casey was prepared to do that much, too, but she wasn't about to like it. She looked up into Draycott's piercing eyes, into his chiseled, brooding face, which quickly reminded her what had happened in the stable and during last night's storm. There was no way to forget how those eyes had stripped her bare, how his hard body had felt when he'd swept her up and carried her back to the gatehouse. Heat swirled through her. His eyes grazed her lips. Suddenly, Draycott smiled as if he'd read her guilty thoughts.
As I was saying, we appear to have two choices, Miss Mallory. One is for you to leave today, but that would hurt both of us. You, because you'll never get to see the Whistler again, and me, because something tells me I'll never find another conservator with even half your skill.
His calm assessment stunned Casey. And the second option?
That you stay here at the Abbey. I'll see that you have free access to the painting, along with whatever materials and tools you require. Your hours will be entirely your own. So which is it to be, Miss Mallory? Or do you perhaps feel unequal to the job?
Casey shot him a furious look. I'm more than up to any job you can give me, Lord Draycott. And don't you have a real-life name? We Americans have never cared much for titles.
Nicholas is my given name. You may use it if you prefer, since my title seems to make you uncomfortable. But if it's not the work you're afraid of, then perhaps it's something else. Me, perhaps?
In a pig's eye.
Yourself, then. After all, your performance last night was quite convincing. One might almost say you put your heart and soul into the act. Perhaps that's what's really troubling you, Miss Mallory, the thought that you're just not up to the temptation of staying at Draycott Abbey with me.
Don't flatter yourself, Lord Nicholas. Resisting you will be the easiest thing I've ever done. His brow slanted upward.
Indeed.
There it was again, that irritating word which could mean a thousand things or nothing at all.
In that case, I fail to see any reason for your reluctance. It will be a simple business proposition, nothing more.
Casey frowned. He was right. There was no reason for all this anxiety. Her days would be spent in solitude up in the long gallery, doing the work that she loved best. Her frown deepened as a voice whispered, "But there'd always be the nights, and you're not half so immune to this man as you'd like to believe. Oh, just say no and be done with it." Her lips moved, but she shocked herself with the words that tumbled out. All right, I'll do it. A hint of emotion flickered over Nicholas's chiseled features.
I'm pleased to hear it. I'll have a suite prepared for you on the second floor.
Impossible. No suite here in the main house. It's the gatehouse or nothing at all. Nicholas's eyes began to glitter dangerously, and he took his time about answering.
That would be entirely out of the question.
Casey rose from her chair. In that case, our arrangement is off. Good day, Lord Draycott. I wish I could say it's been a pleasure.
Are you always this irascible, Miss Mallory? Or is it merely I who have the dubious honor of being able to provoke you to fury?
Casey realized her behavior was totally out of character, but she wasn't about to admit that to this insufferable egotist.
Nicholas's eyes mocked her. I see. Then I must remember to stay well out of your way in the future. It was a complete and total lie. Nicholas only intended to get closer and closer to her. For some reason, that challenge had become at least as important to him as the restoration of the Whistler.
Casey's fingers gripped the back of her chair. That will hardly be necessary, for we have no future, you and I. That I promise you. He looked down.
I guess I shall have to tell you the truth. You see, in the last weeks, there have been several incidents here at the Abbey. Nothing serious. A rake disappearing here, a chair there. Nothing to worry about. Until last week, that is, when someone broke into the gatehouse, ransacked the place royally. One very fine Turner landscape was slashed, and two more were stolen. No one was hurt, thank goodness.
Was the thief caught?
Unfortunately, no. The police have had a look, but the culprit was damnably thorough. No prints, no clues of any sort.
Can't you just replace the locks?
Well, they had been changed the day before the robbery. The man, or men, simply broke through the gatehouse windows. It's far enough from the main house that we could hear nothing. So you see, it would be quite out of the question for you to stay out there.
Casey's breath caught as she realized there was something he wasn't telling her. And you expect whoever it is to return, don't you? For a fleeting moment, Nicholas looked startled.
I do, especially now.
You mean once the news of your whistler starts trickling out? He nodded grimly. Perhaps it already has.
The thought has crossed my mind, too.
Is that why you were so suspicious of me last night?
That reason, among other reasons.
How do you know that I'm not one of them?
I don't. But I mean to find out very soon. And if you are, I'd rather have you here, where I can see you, than somewhere else.
I see. Suddenly, Casey did see that his performance last night was simply to smoke out a thief, that his passion had been no more than a clever ruse. She refused to consider why the idea should leave her with a lingering sense of regret. Meanwhile, it seemed she had no choice but to do as Nicholas required if she wanted to see the whistler again. Her fingers twisted back and forth on the chair rung. Very well. I'll stay here in the Abbey, as long as you agree to stay out of my way while I'm working. His eyes followed her, dark with challenge.
And the rest of the time, Miss Mallory?
The same condition applies. Nicholas came to his feet slowly, his eyes never leaving her face.
Then, of course, I must not interfere in your work. Beyond that, I promise to do nothing you don't wish me to do. Casey Mallory.
A faint flush swept her cheeks. But he was gone before she could tell him that the only thing she wanted from him was to be left alone. Damn the man's arrogance! If he thought she was open to a casual flirtation, he'd find himself snapping at thin air. I'll see you in hell first, Nicholas Draycott, Casey swore silently. Behind her, the air seemed to shimmer and tremble. A shadow fell across the corridor, and the darkness seemed to whisper.
That, too, might be arranged, Catherine. For there are many different kinds of hell, and a great many are right here on Earth. Hell is wanting what you can never again have. Hell is facing something that was once yours and knowing that you destroyed it wantonly. So speak that word carefully, lest you find it sooner than you think. And the ghost of Draycott Abbey had reason to know that particular lesson better than most.
Thirty minutes later, Casey settled down, in silence, to her work. In the daylight, the painting was even more magnificent than it had appeared the night before. A masterpiece of design. The canvas showed a river scene captured at jewel-like twilight, with a single gray figure standing at the end of a shadowy pier. In the distance rocked a phantom ship, lanterns lit, a gleam from empty masts. But was it a genuine whistler? Her heart said yes, but her mind warned her to stay cautious as she considered a thousand questions of pigment, brushstroke, and canvas treatment. From somewhere outside came the crunch of feet on gravel, then the creak of a car door opening. A motor roared to life, smooth and powerful. Casey had to fight an errant compulsion to peek out the window. Then she heard an explosive surge and the skittering of gravel. Car and driver were gone. Casey felt her heart give a little lurch. Silence fell once more, heavier now. She tried to tell herself everything was the same, but somehow, without Nicholas Draycott, the house felt different. Hushed. Waiting. Without fire or heart. Just as she waited. Forget him, will you? Suppressing an irritated sigh, Casey carried the bulky painting to a chair near the window. Carefully, she tilted it back to catch the full rays of the mid-morning sun. Despite modern technology, there was simply nothing like natural sunlight to reveal faint details in painting, and a few hours of exposure would not harm this one. The canvas was clearly fragile, weakened by the hard treatment Whistler was famous for meting out to his paintings. Never content with a single stroke, he often scoured the cloth, digging with brush and file to soften the background for the muted subtlety he prized. But there seemed to be little damage beyond a slight buckling of the wooden struts and some crackling of the paint near the signature. In several spots, the pigment appeared to be losing tone, a constant problem with works by Whistler, who grandly ignored every rule of chemistry and artistic practice in mixing his colors. Her green eyes lit with excitement. Casey pulled out her jeweler's loupe. There by the window she knelt and began meticulously inspecting the canvas, inch by inch. 2 hours later, Casey was still hunched in the same position when Marston knocked.
"Lord Draycott is on the phone for you, Miss Mallory. You may take it in the library."
Casey followed him to a book-lined retreat. He held out a telephone to her, then retired silently. "Hello?"
"Any luck?"
"Luck? Oh, you mean about the painting? I'm afraid it's far too soon to say anything definite, Lord Draycott."
"Nicholas."
Casey plunged ahead, ignoring him. The choice of subject is quite acceptable. The brushstroke extremely good, masterful even. All of that is very promising, but I must remind you that there are still any number of tests to be done. Chemical analysis, canvas inspection, possibly even UV photography.
"Is it or is it not a forgery, Miss Mallory? Or aren't you capable of telling me that?"
Casey's face went white with fury. "No, I can't tell you that yet. No reputable appraiser could without doing one or two tests, and anyone who tells you otherwise is a damn charlatan, Lord Draycott." A faint whisper of sound crossed the line. A sigh of relief, of regret, or of exasperation.
"Very well. We dine at 7. Try to be prompt, if you please."
With that brusque utterance, the phone went dead in her hand. Casey put down the receiver, seething at this latest insult. She was still standing that way when the phone rang again. So, now he meant to apologize. Her lips set in a line of sheer stubbornness. This was one apology she wasn't going to miss. She jerked the phone to her ear. "Draycott Abbey?" Silence met her. 5 seconds. Then 10. Oh, this man was infuriating. "Hello?" Then she heard the faint hiss of an indrawn breath.
"Tell Lord Draycott that my patience is nearly at an end. He now has 2 days left."
2 days? What do you mean?
"Draycott will know what I mean. I wonder if he will die well. I shall enjoy finding out. And enjoy your stay at the Abbey, Miss Mallory."
Casey's heart began to pound. Was this Draycott's thief? "Who is this?" The line went dead. Her fingers gripped the receiver, white with tension. Suddenly, Casey felt painfully vulnerable and exposed. Most of all, she found herself wishing that Nicholas Draycott was a great deal closer at hand. Tea time came and went, then dinner. Lord Draycott was nowhere to be seen. In the end, Casey took her dinner on a tray in the long gallery. Then she returned to work, weary and on edge. Several times she spun about, certain she was being watched, but there was no one behind her, nothing but shadows, and the taste of her own fear. Finally, her nerves drawn taut as a bowstring, Casey angled the mounted canvas back against the wall and stood up. So far, every physical detail had been absolutely accurate. Pigment, backing, canvas, and stroke detail. But most of all, the painting felt real. Her muscles now throbbed from both her meticulous work and an excitement she could barely contain. The laugh came at her ear, low and dark with triumph.
"You just can't keep away from it, can you, Casey Mallory?
She went totally still, every inch of feminine skin flushed with tense awareness, until she could calm her rioting pulse. She refused to turn around. His warm breath played over her unbound hair. She felt the force of his silver eyes sweep over her, and the power of it made the tiny hairs at the back of her neck tingle. "Go away! I'm working, and you are most definitely bothering me." Nicholas made a muffled noise somewhere between a laugh and a curse.
"Look at me."
She tried to ignore him with every straining fiber of her body, but his hand fell to her shoulder, and the touch was like a jolt of raw energy, in places she shouldn't even be aware of, in ways she shouldn't be imagining. His long fingers curved over her skin and then slowly tightened. Nicholas began to smooth the taut muscles aching from a day of painstaking detail work. His thumb hit a knot of angry corded muscle. Casey gasped softly. Instantly his fingers stilled.
"Casey, what is it?"
She wouldn't face him. Somehow that would make this moment, these feelings, all too real. Nicholas's mouth was at her ear.
"Look at me, damn it. Tell me what's wrong."
As if in a dream, Casey angled her head, staring up at him through a curtain of tawny lashes.
The sight of her creamy skin and wide, haunted eyes stunned Nicholas, even though by now he should have become used to her beauty. But something told him he would never become used to the sight of her, nor ever take this woman for granted. And then hunger was a tangible thing, a painful thing, twisting through every inch of his body. Suddenly, he was restless and hungry for her. Somehow, it had always been her. "Did I hurt you?"
Casey thought. "You hurt me, all right, the very first second I laid eyes on you. Maybe even before." Her eyes fell, wide and smoky, riveted to his hard mouth. She blinked, trying to forget what it felt like to be flush against him. His lips hard and seeking, his body hot, hungry with need. "It's my neck. It always happens. When I work. No time, I forget." She was babbling, but she couldn't seem to stop. Besides, Casey realized if she did, she might do something really crazy, like pull him down to kiss her.
"Let me touch you, Casey."
Her heart slammed against her ribs. She couldn't have spoken if she'd been drowning, which she was suddenly, in the dark, hard textures of him, in the heated memories his closeness provoked.
"Don't worry. I'm simply protecting my investment."
Before she could protest, he drew her back against his chest. His fingers dug smoothly at the knots of tension, splaying and contracting rhythmically.
"You're very expensive, in case you didn't know it."
Casey's eyes closed, then jerked open sharply as she fought the power of those masterful fingers. "Oh, I do know it, but something tells me that you're very good at protecting your investments." Nicholas laughed huskily. Strong and certain, his hands played over her shoulders while pleasure lapped through her in drugging waves.
"Tell me how it feels, Casey."
His voice was a dark caress against the lobe of her ear. "Too good." Her eyelids fluttered down, and this time they did not reopen. Nicholas's mouth curved up.
"Soon, I'll make it feel even better." His hands followed the slim line of her neck downward, picking out the exact inch of skin where a cluster of muscles screamed in agony. With practiced skill, he circled the tense center, gradually narrowing the circle. Long weeks in the hospital had taught him a great deal about physical suffering. Now he knew all there was to know about pain and the thousand ways of releasing it. In the weeks after Banlai, physical therapy had helped him survive and restored his sanity. "You work too hard, Connecticut. It's unhealthy."
Casey's eyes cracked open. "Who told you I was from Connecticut?" Nicholas's fingers paused for a fraction of a second.
"Your address was there in your letters of recommendation. I looked them over this morning."
Casey's frown faded and her eyes closed once more. Now I suppose you're going to tell me that you're the very person to teach me how to relax. His smile widened.
However did you guess?
She tried to scoff, to push him away, but she couldn't, because his fingers were heaven itself. Dear God, her bones were turning to jelly, and Casey realized she would do anything to ensure that he didn't stop. For the span of a heartbeat, he hesitated. Her soft protest tumbled out before she knew it.
Even before that, Nicholas had felt the exact moment she stopped fighting him. The instant her mind let down its barriers and her body surrendered to his pleasure. He knew, and the knowledge stabbed him with hot, primal male triumph. Her head fell back, cradled against his forearm and chest. Her breath escaped in a sigh, soft and husky, and endlessly female. Mine, Nicholas thought. Every silken inch, every sweet sigh, mine. And suddenly, he felt a reckless need to make her sigh that way again, but this time with a woman's pleasure. At that moment, a high-pitched hum swept the room, followed by a faint click. A second later, every bulb in the long gallery flickered and went out. The power was out again. He looked down at the woman in his arms, his eyes already adapted to the darkness. But she hadn't even noticed. Right now, she felt nothing but the power of his kneading fingers. Right now, she was intensely vulnerable, infinitely female. And that realization gave Nicholas Draycott stunning pleasure. When her fingers moved a moment later to his taut thigh, he felt it right down to the tip of his toes and right up to the fevered pleasure centers of his brain. So this is what it's supposed to feel like, he thought in wonder. Wanting a thousand kinds of wanting. Needing in ways that hadn't even been invented yet. And through it all, feeling that somehow he had done all these things before. He didn't notice her stiffening until her breathless gasp caught him short. Suddenly her fingers were hard on his thigh, and this time she was pushing him away.
Let me go.
Casey, don't.
Right now, damn you.
She twisted back and stumbled blindly in the encompassing darkness.
You arrogant bastard! What have you done with the lights?
Nicholas smiled faintly, knowing exactly where he was in spite of the darkness. I did nothing. The electricity's merely gone out again. The construction teams nick a cable every few weeks. They're in too much of a rush to bother reading utility maps. He heard her stumble.
Well, if you want to sit here like a fool, then go ahead, but I'm going down to find a candle.
You'll never make it in the dark. It's three flights down to the kitchen.
Ask real nice, and I might bring back a candle for you.
You'd bloody well try it, wouldn't you? And in the process, you'd stumble and break your neck. Then, no doubt, you'd try to sue me for aggravated assault. No thanks. You're going to stay right here while I go and get the candle. Then I'll see you safely to your room, and you'll damn well stay there until the power is restored.
She heard him turn, his soft soles padding over the wooden floor. Casey's fingers clenched into fists.
Now, just wait 1 minute. She started after him and promptly stumbled. The next second she felt hard fingers grip her arm.
Has anybody ever told you you're too bloody stubborn for your own good, woman?
A few times. How about you? She expected him to snap back a denial, and so his silence surprised her. His fingers tightened.
Only once. It was a very long time ago. I didn't listen then, either.
A thousand questions sprang to her lips, questions Casey knew she had no right to ask, and questions, she reminded herself grimly, that she hadn't the slightest interest in having answers for. Nicholas suddenly pulled her along after him.
Come on, then. At least I can keep you from breaking your bloody neck.
At that moment, he sounded as if the prospect of getting rid of her held definite appeal. In the engulfing silence, their footsteps echoed noisily. Every breath was sharp, every rustle intensified.
and the infuriating man knew exactly where he was going, Casey soon realized. "Stop! I can't keep up. It's pitch black in here, remember?" Nicholas muttered something beneath his breath and slowed his pace. Reaching out, she felt the banister beneath her fingers. Down the stairwell they went, and to Casey, it was as if they'd found the path straight into the house's heart. The ancient walls seemed to hum and close around them, as if welcoming them down a long corridor of time, of dreams, to a place they both dimly remembered. Casey tried to cover her growing uneasiness. "Don't you have a generator or something? After all, this is the 20th century." They were at the second floor landing. Nicholas led her confidently to the right, his fingers hard on her wrist.
"Marston will be onto it already, I'm sure."
She frowned, trying to tug free, only to feel his fingers tighten.
"Stop fighting me, Casey. You'll never win."
"That's where you're wrong, Nicholas Draycott." He stopped so abruptly that she stumbled into him. Without a second's hesitation, he twisted back against the wall, taking her with him. His arm slid to her ribs and crushed her against his chest. The next moment, Casey found herself captured between rigid thighs.
"Do you really believe that? Let's find out, shall we?"
Disoriented, she reached out blindly in the darkness. The hard contours of his shoulders flexed rigid beneath her searching fingers. Somehow, her hands curved, digging into those taut muscles. Somehow his hands shifted, burying themselves in her silken hair.
"Catherine, sweet, soft Catherine."
His breath hissed free in a dark, erotic groan. The sound went straight to her heart, setting off sensual explosions that jolted all the way down Casey's spine. "Stop, Nicholas." His mouth cut off her protest. He kissed her urgently, unthinkingly. All his calculation was gone now. All that remained was raw male need. He took without asking, commanded without speaking. He shaped her mouth, then remade it in his desire, and he didn't stop until her lips softened beneath him and her breath fled sharply. Only then did he part her lips and fill her with his heat. Perfectly. Agonizingly. Until the kiss seemed to go on forever, blinding in its power and sweetness. When he released her at last, her mouth was throbbing, and the old Casey was gone, swept away forever. Now a new Casey burned in the darkness, consumed by yearning she had never known before. Nicholas just smiled. Without a word, he turned and tugged her after him into the darkness, moving noiselessly and with total certainty. She heard a door open. A moment later, he pushed her down into a stiff-backed wing chair.
"Stay put. I'll be back in a few minutes."
"Nicholas, wait!" Too late. Casey heard him move away. As her eyes gradually grew accustomed to the dark, she began to make out faint details. The rectangle of gray at a window, the dim gleaming oval face of a clock, its hands at 8 o'clock. She decided to pass the time trying to imagine what the room looked like. The image came to her suddenly, without warning or prethought. Oak paneling, gleaming brass wall sconces, a great crystal chandelier, floor-to-ceiling French windows hung with sapphire velvet curtains, a gilt desk with claw feet, a vast canvas of Henry VIII. Casey shook her head, but the image persisted. No, somehow more than an image. A memory. Without warning, she felt a current of air brush past her feet. Then two eyes gleamed up at her from the darkness. A moment later, warm fur rippled past her ankle. "It's just a cat," she thought, smiling unsteadily. "I wonder what your name is." Gideon. The word just popped into her head. Somehow she knew with perfect certainty that if she spoke the word, the cat would slant his head and meow softly at her. Enough, Casey. She scrambled to her feet, her thoughts reeling. And then, with a click and a faint pop, the power returned, and the room filled suddenly with warm golden light. She saw with relief that there was no gleaming chandelier before her, no gilt desk with claw feet, only a massive rosewood desk in a very lived-in room full of cheerful clutter. And then Casey caught her breath. Her eyes widened, for now she saw the oak paneling, just as she had imagined it. The brass wall sconces gleamed back at her, and there was the lusty monarch himself, swaggering from a gilt frame just above the darkened fireplace. She sank down slowly into the winged chair. At her feet, the cat shifted and meowed softly. "Slow down," she thought. "You've got a good, healthy imagination, but this is just too weird." But the proof was right there before her, tangible and irrefutable. Blinking her eyes did not make it go away. She frowned, looking at the large gray cat with ink-black paws. The amber eyes seemed to narrow, staring back at her intently. "What am I looking at you for? I'm not likely to be getting any answers from you." She took a deep breath, trying to calm her racing pulse. Perhaps she'd seen the room before in a guidebook. That must be the answer. But something told Casey that the Abbey's hard-faced owner would refuse to allow anything but the public rooms to be photographed for publication, which left her right back where she'd started, in the middle of a strange, unsettling house with a sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach and the total conviction that she had been in this room before.
End of Side 2.
Trying to deny the dangerous course her thoughts were taking, Casey jerked to her feet, sending the cat running. Then her eyes flickered across the cluttered desk. They said you could tell everything about a person by what he read. So what would this desk tell her about Nicholas Draycott? She rifled a leather-bound volume of Richard III lying atop the latest thriller by Tom Clancy. Nearby were four thin gardening manuals, a children's book with wildly colorful pictures. Casey's brow wrinkled. She moved closer and pulled out a labeled file folder from beneath another leather volume of Shakespeare. Armistead. Her eyes narrowed. Hadn't Nicholas said something about that name last night in the stable? Her curiosity piqued, Casey opened the folder. There were carefully clipped articles from the lowest and sleaziest of the English tabloids, judging by the lurid headlines and sensational photographs. And then her fingers froze. A caption screamed out at her, "English diplomat freed in Burma." A gaunt face stared back at her from a clipping. Nicholas Draycott's face, 40 pounds lighter and 100 years older. Her eyes flashed to the smaller text below. The lights flickered. Casey smothered a curse as the room was flooded with darkness once more. Scowling, she carried the file to the window and pulled aside the curtain, hoping for enough moonlight to read by. Outside, the wind had risen to a wild, steady rush, and far away in the distance, she heard the echo of bells chiming. Something about the sound was infinitely disturbing, as if they did not belong to this world. And Casey could have sworn they chimed 13 times. Her fingers tightened on the file. She squinted down at the dim lines of script barely visible in the moonlight. Without the slightest sound, the French doors slid open before her. The curtains began to flap wildly. Cold air lashed her face, making her take a step back. The file in her hands fell forgotten to the carpet as the curtains surged up and then parted to reveal broad shoulders encased in black velvet. Long legs eased into breeches and knee-high boots. His cascading ruffles gleamed white beneath a flowing beard, and his raven hair was cinched in a long queue. Casey tried to speak, but only a raw squeak emerged. The man's eyes searched hers.
At last. I've managed it well and truly. About bloody time.
The words coursed across Casey's skin in the chill wind, a rich current of sound. Who are you? Her heart pounded as he strode past her to the unlit fireplace. Without a word, he stripped off his cloak and bent down, his face taking on a fiery glow, bathed in the light of a fire that did not exist. Phantom steam began rising in thick clouds from his sodden cloak as he tossed it over the nearby chair. Briskly, he held his hands out to the dark grate.
Sit down, Catherine Mallory. I'm afraid I haven't a great deal of time.
Casey pinched her palm to see if she was dreaming. The laugh from the fireplace was deep and harsh.
You're not dreaming. Not unless all life is a dream and death is waking. Now do sit down. You're making me deucedly uncomfortable standing there with your mouth hanging open, looking for all the world like a beached mackerel.
Had she walked into a madhouse? Her heart racing, she glared back at the dark figure. Once more, the curtains fluttered. Through the open window glided a second shadow, sleek and gray, legs capped with black paws.
Ah, Gideon. There you are. All clear?
The cat made a low purring sound.
Excellent. Now perhaps you can do something to convince her.
Casey gaped as she watched the sleek creature jump into an armchair near the fire and curl up in a ball. Gideon. So she had gotten the name right after all. Hard on the heels of that wild realization, Casey began to tremble. Now wait, just one damn minute.
I'm afraid I've no time for your hysterics, Catherine. You will oblige me by taking yourself in hand, sitting down, and listening. Now.
He pointed to the armchair where Gideon sat. Without thinking, Casey found herself moving where he pointed. Immediately, the cat shifted, then settled in her lap. The room seemed to shimmer, picking up the light of a dying fire. Again, a fire that did not exist. Casey bit back a moan. Dear God, was she going totally mad? The man at the grate came slowly to his feet, his face somehow reminding her of Nicholas's face.
Not mad, my dear, or even dreaming. Had we more time, I would try to explain this the patient way, but circumstances prevent that. You're still thinking about that bloody file of my brother's.
Brother? So that explained the similarity. She hadn't realized that the Viscount had an older brother, but then, she was no expert on the Draycott family tree.
His fraternal twin, to be exact. Unfortunately, I had a bit of an accident when I was 7 years old. We were exploring along the foot of the cliffs, and I was trapped in a cave when the tide came in.
He studied her for long seconds, his eyes as black as Gideon's paws.
My brother managed to escape, but I, unfortunately, did not.
Casey's eyes widened. I beg your pardon?
Drowning isn't really such a bad way to go. First the cold, then the gradual numbing. But I digress. My brother's labors over that generator will not keep him away much longer, and he had better not find the two of us here when that happens. It would raise all the old jealousies.
The shadowed mouth curved in a faint smile.
Not that he would see me. He never does. But it would make things deucedly unpleasant for you to be seen speaking to thin air, my dear Catherine.
A thousand wild questions flew to Casey's lips. In her lap, Gideon began to purr softly, and somehow the noise only made her more uncomfortable. You can't really expect me to believe...
That I'm a ghost. I don't expect you to believe it yet, but I do expect you to listen. For a man needs your help this night. Two men, in fact.
Casey started to protest, to hurl a barrage of cold, hard questions at him, but his eyes changed. They were naked and vulnerable now.
Once again, it is the three of us. You, Nicholas, and I. Just as it was all those years ago. Lifetimes passed. 2 centuries gone, yet it seems as if it was only yesterday. You can remember none of it?
But you said you died as a boy.
In this lifetime, yes. Blast it. I had hoped to do so much more, to right the old wrongs between us all. Alas, it was not meant to be.
He took a long, slow breath.
The weight of our past hangs heavy on me even now. As that boy, my life was cut too short to make reparations, so I must work in this form permitted me. I've got to reach Nicholas, otherwise the past will be repeated.
I don't understand.
Since he does not, will not see me, I must work through you. I knew you would be able to. You were always so sensitive, so quick to see the truth of things.
Casey shook her head blindly, fighting down the beginnings of hysteria. I don't know who you are or what you want. The figure smiled rather sadly.
I am Adrian, Nicholas's brother, just as I was his brother then. And what I want is to help you, Catherine.
A raw laugh escaped her. You're telling me I'm talking to a ghost?
Please, my dear, just listen. Do it for Nicholas. Do it for me. Most of all, do it for yourself. Between us, we tore you apart, Catherine. Neither one of us could let you go, even though we should have seen what it was doing to you.
Unable to speak, Casey only shook her head.
I see it will take something more to convince you, stubborn one.
On the floor, the forgotten file fluttered open. Suddenly the pages began to turn, soundlessly, by hands unseen. All at once, images began pouring through Casey's mind. Images of lush rice fields, of ancient stone cities hidden beneath an emerald jungle. She saw Nicholas Draycott, young, ambitious, and driven. Then the walls closed in, and the darkness began to crush her. The silent screaming began. Bon Lai. The word hissed down, burning like acid into her head. She understood it all so clearly now, for she became his past. Now she knew why Draycott was hounded by the tabloids for his story. Now she understood the ghosts that returned, night after night, haunting him, shaking him tense and screaming from his sleep. An ambitious Englishman trying just a little too hard to do his job. A golden triangle drug lord flexing his muscle. A dirty little war in a dirty little village in a very dirty little corner of Asia. And Nicholas Draycott had landed in the middle of the crossfire as three countries scrambled for the pickings. Tossed in a dark, muddy hole, he had become the symbol of everything Trang wanted to destroy. Stunned, Casey stared at the man beside the fire, tears sliding down her pale cheeks.
He's a lucky fool, my brother. I only hope he realizes that in time. If things were different, if I had had the chance, I'd take you away from him, just as I did then. But things aren't different, are they? And it's his chance now, not mine.
Casey could only stare at him, aghast, unable to believe what he was saying. For a moment, his face burned with the dark flares of remembrance.
There was never anyone else like you, Catherine. No one who even came close. Though you refused to believe that. That was always your greatest mistake, underestimating yourself.
Casey shivered. Why did he say her name as if there were a lifetime of feeling behind the word? And why did it affect her so strongly? She felt a sudden gnawing premonition that he was about to reveal some frightening truth. His gaze burned over her. Who was he really? A relative of Draycott's who'd come to play a little trick on her? Or merely a neighbor who had too much to drink?
No neighbor. No relative. Draycott has none left, poor fellow. Not alive, that is.
Casey stiffened. She hadn't said anything, only thought it. How?
A simple enough thing, actually, for one of us. And one of the bloody few vices we're still permitted.
Suddenly, Casey pushed to her feet, paying no attention as she dumped an irate Gideon hissing to the floor. I won't listen, do you hear? It's all a trick, an illusion. I'm leaving now. Slowly, Adrian Draycott rose and braced his long body against the mantel. His eyes narrowed.
How would you like to know Whistler's favorite pigment? Shall I tell you the exact proportions to match that nocturne upstairs?
Sheet white. Casey took a step back. Stop it! I refuse to listen to another word! The strange eyes darkened.
You must listen, Catherine, before it is too late. You are in grave danger, as is my stubborn, arrogant brother. So don't interrupt. I can only manage this materialization for a few more minutes.
Casey turned away from him, refusing to listen. Immediately, she felt a faint stirring of wind across her shoulders.
Maybe it's because I loved you once. Or maybe it's because of the harm I did you both then. Ah, damn it. The whys aren't important. What is important is that I've been given the chance to come back, to warn you both, so that things do not end as they did before. Out there on the cliffs, in the slashing wind. So heed this warning well, my dearest heart. There is greed and great hatred at work here, along with something even darker.
Casey felt herself fall beneath the dark rhythm of his words, pulled deep into his spell. Even as she fought him, his voice rippled over her, became part of her.
It was never suicide, though they found your bodies together at the base of the collapsed cliff. If anything, it was murder, and I was the murderer. But I never thought you'd take it so hard, Catherine. And I couldn't marry you, don't you see? I had the estate and the Draycott name to think of. You were just a village girl, and an artist model to boot.
Casey heard him curse, and then a current of air rose and skimmed her cheek.
You can remember what happened then. It is with you even now. All you lack is the desire to know.
Even as he spoke, Casey had a vision of silver cliffs above a leaden sea, of horses' hooves pounding through the rain-swept night, and then raw terror as the ground fell away beneath her and she plummeted down, down into darkness. She froze, rigid with fear. Suddenly, the scent of roses surrounded her.
But now I must say goodbye, my beautiful Catherine. I can come only once more, and it must be through you, since Nicholas refuses to see me or allow me in. The rest is up to the two of you. Until then, tell my brother not to grieve about what happened in the cave all those years ago. Tell him it was necessary, for many reasons. Had I lived, well, I am just coming to understand all of that myself.
The rich voice wavered for a moment.
Just tell him Adrian found the pirate treasure after all, though it cost him dear. I pray to God he will not make the same mistakes that I did. And as for you, my beautiful Catherine, trust in Nicholas. Help him trust in himself. He loved you very much then, far more than I did. He deserved better than what he got. My fault. Again.
The words seemed to fade, and then out of the darkness behind her came the whisper of fluttering curtains. Her heart slamming against her ribs, Casey summoned her courage and slowly turned around. The dark figure was gone. The curtains were drawn. Only a quiet room remained, and the file that lay closed on the carpet exactly where she had dropped it long minutes before. Only a dark fireplace in a chill room, with no one in it but her. White-faced, Casey crossed and picked up the file. At that moment, the door burst open behind her. Nicholas's face was outlined against the lantern's bright rectangle of light from the doorway.
The bloody power's still out, and I'm afraid the generator won't.
He stopped. His silver-gray eyes narrowed on the file Casey clutched to her chest. Suddenly, Casey saw the image of a different man in that doorway. A man taller and slightly leaner, clad in sapphire velvet. And now he carried a single candle that flickered in a ceaseless play of light and shadow over his face. A beloved face. and then her breath snagged as she had a keen image of his naked skin meeting hers, and feeling the touch of his hands exploring her body. Pleasure shot through her. Remembered pleasure. Casey realized that she knew just how to make this man groan with ecstasy, and just when to stop to make him wild with desire. Then the images disappeared as quickly as they had come. Could it possibly be true? Had she and Nicholas really been lovers in some other time? Had they somehow managed to find each other again, haunted by a tragedy that had separated them 200 years before? Suddenly, she had to know for certain whether Adrian had spoken the truth. You really should stop feeling guilty for what happened. Back in that cave, it was meant to be. Nicholas gave no visible response.
Cave? I haven't the faintest idea what you're...
There were just the two of you. The tide came in. You didn't notice until the cave was half covered. Suddenly, just as before, images began to flood into her mind. First came the image of two dark-haired boys scrambling over a beach of white sand. She could hear their reckless laughter above the crash of the surf. It was a dare. His dare. It was your 7th birthday. You were sick from too much plum cake. It was always your favorite, though Adrian...
You bloody little liar!
Casey flinched beneath the force of his anger, but she had come too far to stop now. You called and called, but he wouldn't come away from the tunnel. He was searching. And then the tide surged.
Casey, don't do this.
And then she saw it all clearly. Dear God, you just managed to get out and Adrian didn't. Nicholas pounded across the room, seizing her shoulders in a hard grip.
Did Armistead tell you these things? How much did he pay you to?
Can't you stop looking for villains? I learned all these things from... Adrian!
Stop this bloody charade, Casey. My brother has been dead for almost 30 years.
I didn't believe it at first, but I saw him. He was standing right there by the French doors. He said we were both in danger.
In danger? So that's where all this is leading. How bloody much do you expect me to pay you?
Stop it, Nicholas. Just listen to me. But he didn't stop. He pressed her backward until a ridge of books bit into her spine. Struggling vainly, Casey closed her eyes, trying to ignore the fire of him, desperate to make him listen.
Do you think you're the first to try this scam? Over the last 10 years, dozens of helpful mediums have written to offer their services so that I might escape a terrible fate that's supposedly hanging over me.
Casey's eyes shot open. And you paid no attention?
Half of England must know the story of the Draycott ghost. Any one of those people could tell you that the ghost appears only when a member of the family is in danger. Why should I listen to every crackpot who...
But if we don't listen now, he said it will happen all over again. Dear God, the storm, the cliffs! She swayed as the dark images flashed over her again. Lashing wind, ragged lightning, the explosive fury of collapsing earth. Nicholas savagely wedged his body against hers.
No one but Adrian and I knew those things. And did you guess the rest of it? That I was jealous of Adrian? Dear God, maybe I even wanted him to die?
Suddenly Nicholas stiffened. His glittering eyes seemed to look right through her. Then he laughed mirthlessly.
You never could let it alone, could you? You just couldn't accept the fact that Adrian and I were enemies, and that you were the cause. You were always so determined to smooth over what could never be set right. He doesn't love you, Catherine. Haven't you realized that by now? Adrian is incapable of love, except for himself, and perhaps for that great gray cat of his.
Casey's breath caught. She had the riveting sensation she was looking into the blank eyes of a stranger. The man he had been 200 years ago? Nicholas's eyes smoldered silver, scouring her face.
But you're mine, do you hear? You were always meant for me. I will not let Adrian hurt you anymore, and I'll see to it that you have the things that he would never give you. I will give you the security of my name, a home, a family. Oh, God, Catherine, how I want to see you heavy with our child.
Desperately, she lashed out with her foot and struck him soundly in the ankle. Nicholas flinched. With a start, his eyes refocused. For long moments, he simply stared down at her, frowning.
What did I...
Let me go, Nicholas! She tried to ignore the heat emanating from his body, which was doing crazy things to her pulse.
Not until you answer a few questions for me.
His thumb rose to trace her cheek. Once again, Casey caught the fleeting scent of roses, and the darkness seemed to whisper.
He is your life now. Forget how it ended all those years ago. Teach him to trust you, Catherine. Then take this happiness and never look back.
Casey shivered as Nicholas's finger slid along her lower lip.
Why do you fight it? Is there a boyfriend? Are you married?
Casey stiffened instantly. No. His eyes fixed on her lips.
How can you feel so bloody soft? How can that sexy mouth of yours rip me apart?
Casey shuddered. First had come Adrian's revelations, and now she was caught in dark sensations stronger than anything she'd ever known. His eyes searched her face.
Casey, I'll make it incredibly good between us. I've thought about this since the first moment I set eyes on you. Maybe even before that. Maybe I've been waiting my whole bloody life for this moment.
Casey tried to steady herself. His mouth was at her ear, hard and hungry.
I want to see you wrapped in moonlight, Casey, and not a stitch of anything else. I want to hear you when I fit myself all the way inside you. I want it to be my name, you whisper. My shoulders, you dig your fingers into when you go spinning away into space. And by God, it'll be my body you want deep inside you when the pleasure shatters you into 1,000 pieces.
One by one, the images triggered shockwaves down Casey's spine. Oh, dear God, why do I want those things too? Gasping, Casey tried to break free, realizing clearly that with this man, things would never be halfway or half-hearted. Yes, this man would sweep inside and claim her very soul, and she would welcome his fierce claiming, which could bring her only searing pain and loneliness. For whatever was happening between them was too strange, too powerful to be real or lasting. No, Nicholas, this is all wrong.
Try to tell me you haven't felt it too, Casey. Tell me you haven't had the crazy feeling that this has all happened before between us. You know exactly how it feels when I kiss you, and when you take me all the way home inside you.
Casey heard the desperation driving his words, since it mirrored her own. Her breath caught sharply. So he had felt the same thing she had. Something naked and visceral. Something terrifyingly familiar. Rough and heated, his gaze swept over her silken skin.
You are so beautiful that it hurts, Casey Mallory. And let me see. You have a birthmark on your right breast. It's small and crescent-shaped. You've got another one.
Casey's breath caught as Nicholas went on.
At the base of your neck. You tuck your right hand beneath your chin when you sleep, and you always sleep without a stitch. Just the way you were born, my sweet Casey.
As he spoke, Nicholas made no move to touch her, only gazed at her, his face dark with an endless tormenting hunger. Casey's face turned white. It's another trick!
Then tell me you haven't the birthmarks where I said. Better yet, show me.
Casey swallowed, fighting a wild urge to do just as he asked.
Tell me that I don't remember every detail of how it feels to love you. That the dreams haven't haunted me for weeks, starting in Bon Lai. God, I almost wish I didn't know how your eyes darken with passion. How your breath comes and goes in soft little gasps. The way you moan when I fill you.
He was frightening her now. Stop it, Nicholas. If this is some sort of joke...
It's no joke, Casey. From the first second I saw you, I knew you were the one. Even though in the dreams, I never could quite make out your face. Maybe that's why I fought the knowledge so hard. Why, from the beginning, I found the sight of you so damn frightening.
You're lying.
Am I, Casey? You felt it too? The pooling heat, the sweet, aching restlessness.
She shook her head wildly. You're stark raving mad. You scare me with all this ridiculous talk. Nicholas fixed his fevered eyes directly onto hers.
So you still refuse to admit it?
Casey nodded her head mutely.
No matter. I remember enough for both of us. I remember enough for a whole lifetime. And maybe even more than a lifetime. And what I remember most is wanting you. The way I want you right now. With your honey hair tangled across my chest. With your emerald eyes glazed with passion when I bury myself inside you until you're wild, my sweet Casey.
Then Casey shivered against him. His hunger tightened. His need threatened to overwhelm him. Silence fell around them, tense and brittle. Very slowly, as if in a dream, his head slanted down, raven hair lying against her ivory skin as his lips caressed her neck. Pleasure coursed through her, hot and achingly familiar, just as his mouth was hot and familiar against her. After all the long, lonely nights and empty years, why only with him, all these intense feelings, this complete stranger? She had her answer a moment later. It came in the fierce rush of heated images. He and she, bodies intertwined, frenzied and reckless, not as strangers, but as lovers, skilled and intimate with the secrets of each other's pleasure, knowing every curve and lithe movement until each body was simply an extension of the other. Casey began to tremble. Stop, Nicholas. It was a plea and a silent admission. An end and a beginning.
Never, Catherine. Not until you tell me that you feel it too. Dear God, whatever I have is yours. Whatever I am is yours. Just tell me what's happening to us.
Casey's eyelids fluttered as his strong fingers swept her neck, easing the shirt down until it balanced precariously at the very edge of her shoulders.
But no lower. Not yet. Nicholas Draycott wanted to make this moment last forever. He wanted to make her feel every inch as hungry as he was, so that she'd never think about leaving him again.
Nicholas, we can't. His eyes raked over her, dark with need. Suddenly, Casey saw a pair of entwined bodies reflected there. Their bodies. In that moment, she accepted the fact that she'd loved this man 1,000 times. But she knew she could never tell him that, because then he'd never let her go. Warm and wet, his lips traced the swell of her breast.
Don't be sensible, Casey. Not tonight. Tonight, just forget sense and logic. Forget anything else but us.
His fingers curved over her hips, drawing her flush into the heated line of his arousal.
Dear God, forget anything but this.
Casey felt his need burn through her, but most of all in her heart, which was naked and vulnerable, for him alone. Deny it as she might. Nicholas gasped, reading the dark shimmer of passion in her eyes. The sight of it made his body catch fire. Then it was Casey who gasped as the rough velvet of his mouth took her breast. Her head fell back as pleasure flowed over her like a tide of dreams. And with the pleasure came a swift flood of memories, of him, of her, of all the other times they touched and moved and loved just like this, each one different and yet somehow the same, driven always by a love that didn't die, only surged and tumbled forward in a forever twisting course, spilling over its banks from one life to the next, its molten ripples gleaming down through time.
Nicholas felt her answer before he heard it. It was there in the restless shifting of her hips. Dear God, she was more beautiful than the silken petals of any rose. And though it was hell, Nicholas made himself wait, desperately afraid that this dream would suddenly end, just as all the others had done. He held himself still, aching for her to say the words he'd waited 200 years to hear.
Don't ask this of me, Nicholas.
I must, Casey. Dear God, it's driving me crazy. Dreaming of you was the only thing that kept me going through those long months in captivity. Now I've got to find out if it was nothing more than a dream. I've got to know if I left my sanity back there in Banlai, along with everything else.
His body shifted, his hips teasing as they flexed in the ancient drugging rhythms of passion and seduction. He eased open her shirt with his mouth. Inch by smooth inch, the fabric slipped down her shoulders. Suddenly, Casey was drowning in sensation. When his teeth nipped her naked shoulder, she arched wantonly. She felt Nicholas shudder, and then his fingers eased the cloth lower until it wedged over her arms, holding her captive. Nicholas.
Hush, my love.
He found the birthmark at the base of her neck and traced it lovingly. With a growl of triumph, he found the other on her right breast, which he kissed reverently. Too reverently for the way Casey wanted his claiming now. Her hips shifted, seeking his heat, pleading for it. He tugged her zipper free and eased her jeans lower. A moment later, Casey shuddered beneath his exquisite caresses, overwhelmed by need and raw sensation.
Can you remember every sweet detail as clearly as I do? Oh, God, tell me I haven't lost my mind.
Casey heard the catch in his voice and realized he was as overwhelmed as she. But how could she speak? How could she begin to explain the storm of memories breaking over her all at once? She tried to find the words, digging deep down below the fires of desire fanned by his expert touch, deep down into the dark silence of remembrance where words did not exist or ever would. But nothing could reflect the intensity of what she was feeling right then. Instead, she found emotion and shaped it into movement. With movement, she answered him, and every movement was a discovering, every sigh a claiming. Her senses bold, she ventured out with her answer and prayed it would be enough. As she sensed that the last time, 200 years ago, on the eve of tragedy, it had not been. Her fingers found his hair and slid deep. Her mouth found his shoulder and nipped urgently. Her eyes found his, and her gaze was open, wanting, infinitely vulnerable. Her eyes promised, "For you, Nicholas, only and ever."
Desire slammed through him. Heat exploded to his groin. In that instant, Nicholas Draycott learned 1,000 new meanings of the word torment. But he wanted that sweet torment from her, too, and he wasn't about to be rushed in anything he did this night. He turned and swept the desk clear in one wild, powerful stroke and then lifted her up into his arms. A moment later, he arched her back onto the cool, smooth wood. With a rich, sensuous whisper, the last barriers of cloth slipped free of her arms and hissed to the floor. Gently, his mouth traced a hot path down her chest to her navel. Casey's skin burned beneath him, glowing with an inner fire. The fire of love, Nicholas thought, awed beyond words, knowing his own skin burned the same way. In that moment, he knew that all his life he'd somehow been a taker, but now all he wanted to do was give, to atone with body and soul for a mistake he couldn't even remember. And somehow, Nicholas realized that this would be the very last chance he would be given. Then he thought not at all. All heat and hard planes, his body glided down her nakedness, wanting to taste every sweet inch of her.
Nicholas, I...
Don't stop me. It's been a long time since I've been a knight in shining armor or any other sort.
Casey froze. Fear ripped through her. I can't, Nicholas. I promised myself, not unless it was on my terms. Safe. And it could never be safe with you.
It's never safe, don't you see that? It's only good when you give it all, when you've got everything to lose. It might be easier the other way, but it would be a damn sight less interesting. Let it happen. Just feel it. Me wanting you. You needing me. I love you, Casey.
Then his mouth traced the softness of her thigh. His lips teased aching skin. His tongue found her flowering need. Gently, then not so gently. Conscious thought shattered as Casey's body spun away, raw and desperate, awakened to infinite pleasure. Her heart trembled. Her spirit leaped free. She cried out wildly. And because it was Nicholas, and the night silence was lush with promise, because his touch was nothing but magic, pure, primal magic, she let the last wall topple and fled the bonds to find paradise breaking over her.
At the window, the curtains rippled faintly. Wind growled and tapped at the pane. Outside, Gideon floated comfortably in space 1 minute and then tensed abruptly and hit the ground with a muffled thud. A low curse split the night air. So sorry, old friend. I fear I've miscalculated once again. This whole thing is damnably awkward. It's been 30 years, after all. And 200 before that. There was a faint shimmering just beyond the glass windows, where a pair of shadows arched, then slid together into one. One forgets a great deal. And now, seeing her again like this? Yes, far better for me to go. But keep watch, old friend. On her. On them both. If danger comes, it will be soon. That much I can feel. These men of Trang's are desperate. The gray cat meowed once, and then Gideon trotted to the ancient wall, where he jumped noiselessly and there lay down to wait. Beyond the window, out in the darkness, the air spun wildly, rising in a vortex of twigs and fallen leaves. And then, slowly, the current subsided, and the shimmering began to fade, bleeding away into a silence that was night. And no more than night. Until finally, only the faint, lingering scent of roses remained in the air.
Nicholas held Casey while her breath stilled, stroked her while the tremors ebbed. Lifetimes later, she shifted, breathless, dazed. Nicholas's eyes smoldered silver above her. Casey's heart lurched and joy burst through her. And then she gasped as he molded her against him, skin to naked skin, discovering passion in all its infinite variations. He let her feel him, wanting her. He made her feel herself, wanting him back. He eased her down onto the soft carpet.
I warn you, Casey. The night's gone now, and all that's left is the man. Tonight, he's hungry. He's dangerous. Because he's remembering all the things he's had before and all the things he's never gotten to have. Things he's never even dreamed existed until now. If your mind's in a different place, then you'd better get away as fast and as far as you can. Because in a few seconds, The man's going to be beyond stopping. He's going to do something crazy and completely irreversible.
Take me with you, Nicholas. Now, I don't want to wait another second to know how you feel inside me. As she looked up at him, love dazed and passion slick, he found his way home inside her, all the way home. Heaven, Casey thought. She moaned breathlessly beneath him, adrift in dark, mindless currents of pleasure, past and present, like a split image suddenly focused into one. With a raw groan, Nicholas rocked her to the very center of her soul. Then, crying out her name and shaken to the roots of his being, he joined her in paradise, just the way it always was when he loved her. They fell asleep there on the carpet, Casey's long hair spilling golden over Nicholas's bronze chest, his hand molded protectively around her thigh. Once, and then twice more, they awakened in the night, lips urgent, breath fled, fingers sure and swift, drawing each other to wordless, shattering passion.
The call came in the last chill hour before dawn. The sharp peals shook Nicholas awake, but Casey still slept. With a smothered curse, he slipped from beneath her warm body, reached across the desk, and jerked the receiver to his ear. "Who is it?" From the other end of the line came the faint hiss of indrawn breath. "Dreaming again, Lord Draycott? Such a pity. But perhaps the American is easing your painful memories. Is she good in bed, by the way? Does she make you hard with desire? So different from Su Win, of course, for she knew how to pleasure you in a thousand ways. Leave me alone. So sorry, Lord Draycott, for that is quite impossible. You have something of mine, and I am afraid I need it back. I don't have anything of yours. I took nothing with me from Bon Lai, you bastard. Really, Lord Draycott, do you think me such a fool? You have one more day to give me what I want. If not, you die, and your American lover will die too. Just as Su Win died after she betrayed you. Anger roared through Nicholas along with the ragged edge of fear. Who was it this time? It could be any number of people. The warlord Trang had had dealings with many nations. He must have double-crossed them all at one time or another. Russian, American, and Chinese. Even the British had had their reasons for approaching the ruthless warlord on occasion. And Trang would deal with anyone for hard cash. His trade was infinitely accommodating. Any commodity of worth to the buyer. Information. Poppy. Planes. But it was the human trade Trang liked most. And he was very good at it. Nicholas waited for the cold, precise voice to finish, fighting his rage and saying nothing. Long minutes later, his face a mask of unrelenting fury, he lowered the telephone back to its cradle. Slowly, very carefully, trying to ignore the wild laughter that erupted from the other end just before the line clicked dead beneath his fingers. One more day to give them what they wanted. One more day, and then they would kill him and everyone in the Abbey.
End of Side 3.
Smiling dreamily, Casey reached out, seeking the warm, muscled length that had pillowed her, teased her, and coaxed her to wild abandon throughout the night. But her hands met only cold cloth. Jerking upright, her eyes fixed on an unfamiliar room. Heavy velvet draperies on a huge mahogany four-poster. Nicholas's room. Nicholas's bed. She remembered all of it now, and couldn't help smiling even as her cheeks reddened at the memories of the night before. But where was he? She frowned, sensing a strange emptiness. Slowly she lay back. Where had he gone? Was he already regretting last night? Had something happened to him? Unbidden, a new image sprang to her mind. Lightning over a jagged silver shore. A riderless horse, hooves pounding out of the darkness.
Wait!
And then a scream, ragged with terror. Her scream. Casey tensed, feeling the fear slam through her even now. What was wrong with her? Was this the dream that shook Nicholas from sleep night after night? Was this the past that Adrian had warned her would be repeated? Was there a curse on this house after all? Or was it perhaps she who was cursed? She slipped from the bed, her eyes widening as she took in the dress and lacy lingerie laid out on a nearby chair. She picked up the accompanying note, its lettering angular, elongated and bold. Nicholas's writing. There could be no doubt about that.
My sweet Casey. Had to go out. Ought to be back in good time for lunch. Meanwhile, try this on. It was my grandmother's, and I rather think it will fit you, Nicholas. P.S. Did I tell you that you snore? Low and soft? Very erotic, actually. P.P.S. Did I tell you that I love you? I do, you know.
Her eyes glistening, Casey lifted the silken dress, mesmerized by the way the soft mauve folds fell about her. As smoothly sensual as Nicholas's hands had been the night before. Her carry-on bag lay on the dresser. Nicholas must have put it there before he left. She quickly fished out the pink ballet slippers she had packed for comfort on the long flight. Then, fully dressed, she smoothed down her long skirt, feeling every inch a princess or a heroine in an old novel. Feeling, best of all, like the woman Nicholas loved. Which was all she wanted to be, anyway. There was a soft tap at the door, followed by Marston's voice.
I beg your pardon, Miss Mallory?
Casey opened the door. Yes?
Lord Draycott was called out some 2 hours ago, miss. Before going, he left instructions that you are not to be disturbed. But as it happens, there is a police officer below requesting to speak with you. I asked the nature of his business, but he declined to say.
I'll speak with him. The broad-shouldered officer was waiting in the salon. He turned as Casey came in, his eyes blue and very keen, his smile expectant. He was much younger than she'd expected. Marston left them, closing the door softly.
Miss Mallory, isn't it? I expect you'll be wondering why I've come. Business, I'm afraid.
His eyes flickered over her face, assessing her reaction.
But I haven't even told you my name. Detective Chief Inspector Gerald Parks, Hastings Police. I think you'd better sit down before I continue.
Casey paled as she sank into the nearest armchair.
I'm sorry, but there's been an accident. Or at least we believe it was an accident. We found Lord Draycott on the coast road, slumped over his steering wheel about 10 miles from here. Engine still running, but the car was pretty badly banged up. Before he passed out, the Viscount muttered something about another car trying to run him off the road.
Casey felt the room begin to spin. Is he? Oh, dear God, will he?
I expect he'll pull through, Miss Mallory. They've taken him to a hospital in Hastings. We've an excellent staff there. No need to fret. But before he went under, Lord Draycott asked for you.
Casey lurched to her feet. What are we waiting for, Inspector? I'll just tell Marston where I'm going. She ran toward the door.
I'd prefer that you didn't do that.
Casey looked back, frowning. Why not?
The fewer people who know about this, the better, Miss Mallory. You see, Lord Draycott was being harassed. The only reason we're telling you is because he specifically asked. You do understand, don't you?
Casey didn't understand. Not entirely, but she nodded anyway, desperate to get to Nicholas. She followed the inspector outside to a dusty blue Mini with a badly rusted fender. An older man, dark-haired, with a lived-in face, nodded to her from the front passenger seat.
My partner. Right now he's got a nasty case of laryngitis.
The next moment, with the inspector behind the wheel, the engine coughed to life, and they were bowling down the long, twisting drive. Casey's eyes blurred, and she had to resist an urge to turn and stare back at the Abbey's ancient walls. Suddenly it seemed as if the last 2 days had been a dream. And why did she have the odd feeling that when she returned, it would all be gone? She gave herself a shake, fighting down a sick stab of fear. She tried vainly to think of anything but Nicholas, lying white-faced and silent in a hospital bed. Inspector, have you had any luck with your search for the thieves? Lord Draycott mentioned what happened at the gatehouse. The inspector's eyes flickered to her face in the rearview mirror.
Not much, I'm afraid. No trace of the paintings. In fact, no clues of any sort. Damn good, these fellows.
Casey barely heard him. Hold on, love. You can't get away from me now, not when I've just found you. I'm coming, Nicholas. She stared out the window anxiously as the narrow road dipped and twisted past thatched, timber-framed cottages and grand estates hidden behind stone fences. The young inspector drove quickly and efficiently. Breathing deeply, trying to relax, she watched as the landscape flattened and the houses disappeared. The road was empty now, and they began to pick up speed. Somewhere in the distance came the glint of water. The channel. To the west rose the treeless slopes of the Seven Sisters, their white cliffs bared to the ceaseless hammering of the sea far below. She knew that meant they were going west, while Hastings lay to the east. "Excuse me, Inspector, but this is the road to Eastbourne, isn't it? Hastings would be the other way." The inspector met her eyes in the rearview mirror again. He nodded briskly.
"Quite right. This road loops about, though, and with less traffic we'll make better time."
Casey managed a faint smile, feeling rather foolish.
"You know the area, then, Miss Mallory?"
"Not really. I took the bus from Hastings on the way to the Abbey, though, and I remember the route." It was a moment later when the sound penetrated her consciousness, very soft, like a sigh, a sound she'd heard before. Her eyes narrowed. She sat up straighter. Then the realization slammed into her like a fist. Her heart began to pound. Dear God, she hadn't even asked for any identification, and they hadn't let her tell Marston that she was leaving. Casey swallowed, trying to steady her voice. "Was Nicholas's wound better when you saw him?" The blonde brow framed in the rearview mirror slanted up.
"Wound?"
"On his cheek. He fell when the power was off last night. It was quite a bad cut."
"No. No, there didn't seem to be any bleeding. I can't say for certain, though, since the bandage was still in place."
Through the wild hammering of her blood, Casey managed to smile naturally and nod. Dear God, it was true then. Nicholas had no wound on his cheek or any bandage. If these men had seen him, as they claimed, they would surely have known that. Again came that familiar sound, the faint hiss of an indrawn breath. Now Casey knew without any doubt that the man in the front passenger seat was her unknown caller from yesterday. Her fingers locked in her lap. At least they didn't know she'd found them out. Not yet. Think! Catherine Chelsea, think! If they didn't have Nicholas, then where was he? And what would he want her to do?
Escape.
The words simply dropped into her mind, then hung there, resonating faintly. Casey blinked. And how exactly am I supposed to do that? She didn't realize she'd asked the silent question until a voice answered.
There's a door right beside you, my dear. I suggest you use it.
She could feel the force of him most clearly. Adrian, she thought?
None other. But you must make haste.
That's easy for you to say, Adrian Draycott. You're a ghost. You can walk through walls, came Casey's angry, silent answer. Static ripped through her thoughts for a moment, and then the voice in her mind returned, needle sharp this time.
Now, Catherine, before they realize you've seen through their desperate little masquerade, get out of there.
Still wearing a crooked smile, Casey moved her fingers down in search of the door handle. They were going about 40 miles an hour, enough to do quite a bit of damage to whatever part of her anatomy hit first. At least she was on the left side of the car, which meant she would land on grass rather than pavement. With a gasp, she yanked open the door and dove from the Mini. The ground exploded toward her, a swirl of green, and the so-called inspector shouted,
"She's bolted, dammit! We've got to stop her!"
Casey heard the shrill scream of breaking tires. An instant later, her vision filled with shards of light and a savage hammering split her left temple. Then she heard the dim grinding of gears, followed by Adrian's voice.
Run, Catherine. Cross the fields to your left, towards the cliffs.
Casey brushed a shaky hand across her temple and frowned to see it covered with blood. Wincing with pain, she stumbled to her feet and began to weave toward the distant slash of silver, where the cliffs turned to chalk below the green turf of the downs. Her thoughts suddenly turned to Nicholas.
Unharmed, but he'll need time.
Casey no longer even wondered at this strange, wordless form of communication. The word unharmed gave her the strength to plunge ahead.
Good girl. That's it. Steady on. Now, to the left.
Abruptly, the voice receded, as if Adrian had moved away. She fought down a feeling of fear at the sudden severing of their unspoken contact. Gasping, she ran over the flat green earth, her eyes fixed on the distant azure glint of the channel. And then she heard a low growl, felt the ground begin to vibrate. Still running, she turned her head and saw the blue Mini swerve sharply and head off the road onto the grass, coming directly toward her. Adrian, what do I do now? No answer. Casey fought the razor-sharp pain in her head. Something slipped into her eye, blinding her, and she brushed it away roughly. More blood. Just like that night, when she'd run away toward the village, unable to bear the pain of being caught in the middle any longer. Casey shuddered as the growling behind her grew louder. It came to her then, with total blinding clarity. She'd never make it. She could never hope to outrun the car, not without trees or any place of concealment. Adrian's warning had come in vain, after all. A wave of despair slammed into her. It was not for herself that she grieved, but for the love severed fragile and newborn. No! Her wild, angry cry split the air. There must be something she could do. She had to think. He'll need time. That's what Adrian had whispered to her. And then she saw it, a narrow, gorse-fringed basin dotted with boulders at its lowest point. Enough gorse to slow a car, enough stones to savage the car's underbody and perhaps even destroy the engine floor. And if she circled around gradually, the basin would be totally invisible from above until one was almost upon it. Casey's breath was coming ragged in her ears when she shifted course. Behind her, the motor droned louder. Oh, Nicholas, hurry! She stumbled down the slope toward the basin, calculating the remaining distance, 25 feet. Behind her, she heard the man curse. A second later, a bullet whined past her head, and she ducked reflexively. Dear God, not a gun, too. 15, 12... Her heart felt like it would explode from her chest. 10, 9, 8. And then the roar was beside her. From the corner of her eye, Casey saw a door swing open. They meant to ram her. Somehow, at the last second, she managed to dodge and stumble to her knees, then right herself. A moment later, she felt the sharp points of the gorse spear her ankles. Just in time, she jumped across and dropped out of sight, flat against the ground. An instant later, the Mini came sailing over her head, tires spinning uselessly, engine whining, only to land with an explosive crash atop the rugged line of boulders at the center of the green crater. Without a backward look, Casey pushed to her feet and lurched back up the incline away from the muffled shouts. She had just cleared the gorse when she heard a shrill crack. White-hot metal bored through her shoulder, gripping her forearm. She tried to fight back tears. "Adrian, where in the name of heaven are you?" She swayed, closing her eyes to the pain, feeling hysteria weave its seductive web around her. When her tear-streaked eyes opened, she saw a gray shape dart over the slope, moving downhill. Casey squinted in disbelief. "Gideon?" But the cat was gone, no more than a slash of gray as he surged down the hill out of sight. From the hollow came angry curses, grunts, and the whine of spinning wheels. Then the voice took her by surprise.
"Go, Catherine. Head east."
She stumbled to the left. "Adrian?"
"No, east. To the right. That's it. Steady now, love."
Casey did as the voice bade her. Too tired to wonder at his return. Too tired now to think of anything but escape. With her eyes glazed over, Casey didn't see the dark shape at first. Only gradually did the shadow resolve into an oval, then into a horse with flying feet and a rider. Nicholas! Tears of pain now turned to tears of joy. Such fierce joy that she didn't hear the mini nearly upon her.
"Turn!"
The raw order rang out in the depths of her mind. She moved by pure instinct, just as Nicholas's frantic warning filled her ears a split second later. Horrified, she watched a blue door go whipping past, only inches away from her knee. If she hadn't moved, it would have broken her kneecap. Then she saw that the car kept going, picking up speed. Dear God, they were heading straight for Nicholas. In mute horror, Casey watched the two adversaries surge together on a collision course, car and rider implacable. She caught a glimpse of Nicholas's face, dark with fury, before he pulled his mount aside at the final instant, barely managing to avoid impact with the mini. He pounded past her a moment later.
"You all right?"
"Yes. Be careful. They've got a gun." But he was already gone, streaking toward the coast. In that instant, Casey felt her stomach wrench as she realized his intent. To save her, he meant to draw them off toward the cliffs. "Be very careful, my dearest love." At first she didn't realize that she'd spoken with her thoughts rather than with speech. Raw static filled her mind for an instant, and with it came a burning sensation like acid, like bitter sadness and aching regret. She turned, her legs wobbling, her lungs aching. Horrified, she saw the mini turn about in pursuit of Nicholas. As if caught in a nightmare, she watched the car streak after horse and rider. In the bright sunlight, the jaws of the cliff gleamed silver above the sea, and Casey realized that this deadly game of cat and mouse would soon be pushed to a bloody conclusion. "Help him, Adrian, please! If you ever loved me, help him now!" Tears spilling from her eyes, Casey put all the force of her yearning heart into her plea. Suddenly, the swirling static receded. Now only chilly silence remained as the two shapes began to converge. They were gaining on him. It was only a matter of yards to the edge now. Nicholas kneed the horse in a sharp turn, but the car followed, its angry wheels jolting over the earth. "Dear God, no!" And then, out of nowhere, came the gray blur, flashing from behind the gorse and streaking over the flat earth. Only feet from the mini, Gideon lengthened his stride and leaped into the air, legs flexed, a study in grace and power. A second later, the cat lay flat against the windshield, his black paws braced against the wiper blades as he clung to the glass. Casey never knew exactly what happened next. It would always remain a blur of noise and movement interwoven with the sound of her own screams. An angry shout, the wild neighing of a horse, the scream of grinding gears, and then the dark rectangle of the car, rising as if in slow motion and arching in sudden, dreamlike silence over the ragged edge of the cliffs to plunge out of sight into the snarling waters 600 feet below. Nicholas! Already swaying, Casey felt her legs give way. That was the last thing she felt before crumpling slowly to the ground.
It is done. I must go now, Catherine.
Casey frowned, feeling the words slip down to the dark place where she floated. Mind asleep, thoughts closed off to the outside world. Hadrian?
Yes, my heart. I'm here.
Thank you for saving him. Silence. Bleak and total for long moments. In those empty seconds, Casey realized exactly how much he loved her and just how much he regretted having to give her up. Suddenly, the scent of roses filled her mind, along with the gentle kiss of a spring wind.
Nonsense. It is no more than I came to do. And now you, my stubborn woman, must rest. There will be time enough for all the other things.
Casey tensed, caught up in the terror of those last chilling moments. Gideon!
Gideon will be with me, which is where he belongs. Don't fret, Catherine, for what you cannot begin to understand. Just accept this thing I tell you.
Then thank him, at least. She could feel a smile crinkle through her.
Gideon has already heard. You might try the aquamarine, you know. Whistler vows it was always his most difficult pigment in the nocturnes. And be bold. Add ochre to your aquamarine and lavender to your grays, then dilute the lot with a liberal dash of turpentine. This is his way of thanking you for caring. But then, you were always a rare one for caring, weren't you, my love? Even while Nicholas and I tore you in two.
The scent of roses lay heavy upon her, almost like a lover's caress. And then Casey's thoughts began to scatter. Exhaustion overtaking her, the fragile thread of contact beginning to unravel. Adrian?
Sleep.
He was almost paternal now. She felt the last thread break, then slip deep into a cloud of dreams, into forgetting, just as Adrian had intended.
Goodbye, my heart.
Adrian knew Casey could no longer hear him. Regret hung heavy as he began the last difficult step of easing the contact which had become the sweetest thing in his long and very tattered existence. His bitter sigh mingled with the wild channel winds.
My three visits have been given and used. There can be no more, my love. Someday, perhaps, you will remember, when the pain has faded and this day is no more than a faint shadow in your memory. And on that day, perhaps you will remember just how much I loved you, Catherine, though my damnable pride always got in the way. Until then, forget me and everything about me. But please, mind my roses, if you will. Them I have loved full well. But not as much as I have loved you, Catherine, and always will love you.
Then the voice melted away, buffeted by the chill currents from the sea, swallowed up by the cry of gull and curlew. Soon, even the scent of roses was swept away on the churning channel winds.
Casey, can you hear me?
Something about the raw plea in that voice pierced Casey's dark veil of sleep. She opened one eye warily, wincing at the light that flooded in. Her head immediately began to throb, and pain broke over every inch of her body. It was a hard face Casey saw above her, eyes smoldering silver, lips full, tense with fear. Slowly she reached up and traced the taut line of that mouth. A beloved mouth. A beloved face. Then recognition burst over her, and the lingering traces of her dreams were swept away. Nicholas, is it really you?
Filled with intense relief, he engulfed her in his arms. Yes, my brave, sweet love. Then, no more words, just two bodies crushed together, heart to wild heart, breaths raw with thanksgiving. And then, as the fear slowly ebbed, they were caught up in feelings far different. Driven by a need that felt 200 years old. He would have taken her then, fiercely, out of a raw desperation to prove that they were both alive, with a future yet to share. But at that moment, Marston tapped at the salon door and entered, followed by an irritated Inspector Jameson. Nicholas smothered a curse. Not yet, it appeared, were they to have their moment of peace. Casey managed to prop herself up on the sofa, noticing fully now the small bandage at her temple and the one covering the wound on her shoulder. Nicholas remained close beside her, fully conscious of how close they had both come to dying. The police inspector plunged right in with the question that had been bothering him the most these last 2 hours.
"I'm terribly sorry to intrude, Lord Draycott, but I still don't see how you knew where they'd gone. The coast road could have taken them any number of places."
Nicholas's eyes fixed on Casey's face, drinking in the beauty of her smile. He could say nothing about the voice he'd heard. Nothing about the swift, sharp images, or the absolute certainty he had had of her location. Then his lips curved in a dark smile.
"I'm afraid I haven't the slightest idea, Inspector. Just the lucky guess, perhaps."
Jameson gave an exasperated sigh.
"I don't believe in guesses, Lord Draycott. It's hard work that solves crimes. Shall I be frank?"
"Of course, Inspector."
"Special investigations knew that Trang had secured a movable fortune somewhere close at hand for a fast escape. It was there all along, hidden in the mud of your cell, an ancient Buddhist reliquary urn set with a fortune in cabochon gems. And inside was a microfilm list of all Trang's contacts in Asia as well as Europe. And that's what your two friends were after. They'd been involved with Trang long enough to learn about his little stash, and when the choppers came in for you, Lord Draycott, they were already scrambling for the urn. They never found it, though, because by then soldiers were swarming everywhere, and they didn't have a clear chance to look. By the time things settled down after Trang's death, the urn had disappeared. And that's where special investigations came in. They found out about the contents of the jar last week and grew distinctly uneasy when Miss Mallory arrived. They thought that she might be working with one of those fellows from Barnley."
Nicholas was incensed.
"The bloody interfering imbeciles!"
Silently, Casey reached out, drawing his hand to her cheek, thus ending his protest, so the inspector forged ahead. "By the way, the two of you were extremely lucky out there on the downs today. That's a damned unstable stretch of cliffs. It could have given way any moment, especially with the weight of the car. Good God, didn't one of your ancestors fall from the cliffs somewhere near there, Draycott?"
A closer ancestor than you'll ever know, Nicholas thought. And luck had absolutely nothing to do with the events that took place out on the cliffs today. Love had saved them, along with trust, and perhaps a little help from Draycott Abbey's proud and stubborn ghost. Nicholas saw Casey shudder. Jameson saw, too, and decided nothing else needed tending to here.
"I expect I'll be going, then."
Tomorrow, one of my men will pop round with the Turners we recovered that those two ruffians had stashed, Lord Draycott. When he left the salon, Marston, efficient as usual, was waiting to show him out.
As soon as the inspector left, Casey's eyes probed Nicholas's face. How did you know where they'd taken me? He ran his thumb tenderly over her brow near the white bandage at her temple.
Something told me you were going to ask that. Let's just say that a bird told me.
Casey looked skeptical. Indeed. Her brow rose in a devastating imitation of the Viscount's own arrogant gesture.
That's the only answer you're going to get from me. After all, who are you to complain? You claim to have conversed with a ghost.
Then Nicholas gave her a long, devouring kiss. Long minutes later, when they finally began to resurface, Casey slanted her head back, frowning. Ghost? I don't believe in ghosts. It was Nicholas's turn to look skeptical.
Very well, then. Let's just drop the whole business. But one day, I'll work it all out of you, I promise. And I can be most persuasive when I wish to be, Casey Mallory.
Prove it to me now, she smiled seductively. With a low growl, he did just that, leaving no weapon in his vast arsenal unused. When Casey's breath was ragged and her pulse beat a wild staccato, Nicholas twined her slim fingers through his.
I love you, Casey. You know that, don't you?
Her eyes radiant. Casey nodded up at him, too full of emotion to speak just yet, still floating on the rich currents of the love that surrounded them. And then Nicholas swept her up into his arms. Whatever are you doing?
I'm carrying you upstairs, my heart. I find I've had entirely enough talking for one day.
Put me down this instant, Nicholas. I'm perfectly able to walk.
Ah, but I like carrying you, Casey Mallory from Connecticut. I plan on carrying you quite often. Up my steps, over my threshold, into my bed. And right now, I have a very important question to put to you. But I mean to render you entirely mindless with lust before I risk it.
Casey smiled. Her fingers eased deep into his dark, unruly hair. Indeed. Nicholas's laugh was silk over steel.
Do you know that my aunt has been calling all morning? She is just itching to get her hands on you. She's got an attic chock full of art up at that ruin of hers in Yorkshire. But I told her you'd be tied up until after the honeymoon. We've decided on Lake Como, by the way.
Have we? And what else have we decided upon? Casey gave him a provocative look. Nicholas's eyes narrowed to silver slits.
That it must be very soon.
Casey sent a teasing, hot, wet trail of kisses down his neck. Nicholas's fingers tightened on her hips.
I'll never get enough of you, Casey. I warn you here and now. In fact, I probably won't let you out of my bed for a week.
The smile she gave him was instant and breathtaking. Promises, promises.
And just in case you change your mind at the last minute, I have a little bribe for you, my dear Miss Mallory. It's upstairs, in the long gallery. Would you care to see it?
Casey nodded dreamily, thinking the only bribe she needed was him, the things he did to her, the cherished way he made her feel. He carried her upstairs, then lowered her gently to the ground before the door to the long gallery, frowning.
That's odd. I could have sworn I left that door closed this morning.
He glanced quickly through the room. The curtains were drawn now, as Casey had instructed, to protect the fine old tapestries and oriental carpets from the damaging effects of the sun. The quick inspection told Nicholas everything was as he'd left it. With a faint shrug, He took Casey's hand and led her to the canvas propped on a chair by the far wall.
It's yours, my love. That's the least I can do. Without it, I might never have found you.
A startled protest broke from her lips. Nicholas! You can't! I couldn't! It's far too valuable! It's genuine! I should have told you yesterday, but... He stopped her with one finger, soft upon her lips.
All the better, my heart. My only condition is that it not hang in our bedroom. I want no distractions when I have my way with you, woman.
Casey decided not to argue with him about the canvas now. Instead, her hands climbed slowly to the buttons at her collar. The first came free, and then the second. Her fingers slipped lower, freeing a third. And what about when I have my way with you, my lord? Nicholas's eyes darkened.
Promises, promises.
Then clear laughter spilled around them, dispelling the gallery's lingering shadows, along with any ghosts that might have haunted that ancient room. Nicholas pulled her to him, easing her between his taut thighs until she felt the hard evidence of the passion she had so skillfully provoked. Casey's hips shifted against his thighs, restless and sweetly urgent, her eyes fixed on his mouth. His hand moved over her ribs until his fingers skirted the full swell of her breast. He didn't even try to resist the urge to move higher and caress her seductive curves. Fire shot through him when he heard her breathy sigh and saw her eyes close to his tender touch.
Casey.
Yes. Please, Nicholas. Fingers laced, hearts meshed, they moved unsteadily to the door. They were almost at the threshold when Casey stiffened, staring at the massive portrait that hung beside the entrance. Nicholas! The portrait! He studied the gaunt figure of his ancestor impatiently. Clad in velvet and lace, the 8th Viscount wore a faint, sad smile on his proud lips.
Am I supposed to see something?
Adrian. Casey seemed to hear a faint humming in the air around her. With it came the drifting scent of roses. She frowned, trying to place something. Something about that smell, something that seemed very important. Her eyes narrowed. I could swear there's something different about it. The face, the stance. Maybe I'm just imagining it. This house does strange things to me.
I was hoping you'd say it was the house's owner who does strange things to you.
Suddenly, with a little cry, Casey pointed lower. There! That's it! The rose! He didn't have a rose before, I'm sure of it. I worked here for a whole day, and I never before saw that rose. Nicholas studied the portrait more carefully this time. The figure carried a single rose in full bloom, the same sort as those growing over the stone face at the front of the house.
Quis de nymph. Maiden's blush. One of the old reprobate's favorites. To tell the truth, I never paid much attention to the portrait before. Of course, all of these have been reproduced in some collection or another. We'll have a look in the library and check on it.
Casey was still staring at the portrait when Nicholas turned her around to face him.
Tomorrow, that is. Right now, I've got other things on my mind than paint and canvas.
With a need that was hunger and far, far more, Nicholas swept her up and strode down the hall to his bedroom. Once there, he laid Casey back against the sapphire coverlet.
How right you look there.
He slipped the buttons of her dress free and tossed it away, feasting on her pure ivory nakedness. In a wild flurry of rustling, he tugged his shirt from his pants and fumbled at his zipper with fingers suddenly unsteady. Seconds later, seconds that seemed like an aching eternity, His clothes went flying atop hers. Slowly, Nicholas laced his fingers through hers and stretched her arms above her, every movement deliberate as he covered her with his hard body.
Marry me, Casey Mallory. Spend the rest of your life making me hungry, happy, and very crazy. Sneak files out of my desk. Lock me in my own stables. Make me the happiest man on earth.
His eyes searched her face for her answer. Yes. 1,000 times yes, my love. A tear worked from the corner of her eye. Her love poured over him in a golden flow, nearly tangible. At last, some of Nicholas's fear began to ebb.
Are you sure, Casey? Are all the ghosts gone now? There's room for only 2 in this bed.
With eyes full of passion, Casey stared up at him. I told you. I don't believe in ghosts.
What do you believe in, Green Eyes?
You, Nicholas Draycott.
Prove it.
Instantly, Casey arched her back and, wrapping her legs around him, drew him within, beginning their rhythmic dance. Her soft, breathy gasps rocked through Nicholas like an explosion. He felt her tighten around him, her eyes dazed as she pleaded for him to follow. With a raw groan, he did, until time shimmered and wove its glowing strands around them. Long spirals crossing and then meeting again, past, present, and future caught together in the beauty the lovers wove with hearts and minds and bodies one.
Somewhere far out over the downs, a church bell rang 12 times, and then once more. A freak of nature, the experts called it, the product of high humidity and low temperature. But the locals only shook their heads, knowing it was something very different. They knew the work of a ghost when they heard it, the work of the Draycott ghost, to be exact, signaling his presence with that phantom 13th stroke. Upstairs in the long gallery, a dark portrait began to shimmer in an errant beam of sunlight from a not-quite-closed curtain. Golden light played over the man's lips, carved in a proud, bittersweet smile. In his hands, the blush-pink rose seemed to gleam, its petals slowly unfolding while rich perfume filled the air. One petal moved, detached from the bloom, and fell dreamlike to the floor. And then, as the sun moved behind a cloud, the beam shifted and the portrait was cast back into shadow, resolving into a flat plane of oil and canvas once more. From the end of the hall came the creak of wood, followed by soft, breathless laughter from Casey.
Again? Nicholas, you wouldn't. I couldn't possibly.
Nicholas gave a low, primal growl, dark with triumph, rich with promise. Wanna bet? You make me feel like a man who's got 200 years to make up. Which, in a way, he did. Perhaps they both did. So it was no surprise that neither noticed the sleek, gray form ghosting past the door and down the corridor. On velvet paws, Gideon found the long gallery and came to rest before the portrait of Adrian Draycott. The cat sniffed at the fallen rose petal, then turned to stare up at the painting. For a moment, the air seemed to hum. Then Gideon jumped up, right into the portrait, which shimmered and seemed to open as the gray body sailed inside and then disappeared from view completely, to the sound of Adrian's low, welcoming laughter.
Copyright 1998, Renaissance Productions Incorporated. And now, a special message from Christina Skye.
I have to admit, when I first sat down to write Enchantment 7 years ago, I had not the slightest inkling that Draycott Abbey, its imperious guardian ghost, and his faithful cat companion would have such an electrifying effect on everyone whose lives they touched, mine included. Instead of an end, this story turned out to be a beginning. If you'd like to read more about the Abbey and its mysteries, 5 of my books are available from Avon Books. You can order them by calling 800-762-0779. Just ask for Hour of the Rose, Bridge of Dreams, Bride of the Mist, Key to Forever, and Season of Wishes. Each one is a haunting mix of danger, romance, and otherworldly interference by Adrian and Gideon. I'm also delighted that my newest Draycott Abbey book will be available for you in September of 1998. Christmas Night is a story about getting exactly what you've always wished for, and then having no idea at all of what you're going to do with it. By the way, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at this address, sky1800@aol.com, or check out my website at www.comet.net/writers/sky. Now it's back to work for me. I've got a brilliant heroine who's completely messed up her life, and a man who is sensational at everything except what truly counts, believing in his own heart. Bye for now, and may life always bring you happy endings.